All right, everybody. Joel Radio. Welcome in, everybody. Joel Fragmenti here. Corey Hall's over there.
L'chaim.
Corey Hall, just back from the Oscars.
Yes.
Meaning back, meaning from your couch.
That's right. Yes, I watched from the comfort of the... I did make it to the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion this evening.
It's the Dolby Theater.
Is it the Kodak Theater?
I think it's the Dolby Theater now. It was the Kodak Theater, but Kodak went out of business because no one was buying cameras
anymore.
Kodak's
still in business, aren't they?
I think Kodak's out of business. All right,
it's the Thomas Dolby Theater. We were blinded by science.
We were, that's right. But yeah, the Oscars were last night. We're going to review those.
Oh, do we have to?
We don't have to by law. But you know, it's funny. The last show we did was our big movie spectacular.
Yeah, we might as well flush the toilet.
Which was
films.
Way, way, way more entertaining and more of a tribute to actual good movies than the Oscar ceremony itself.
Well,
I think
in some ways, yeah.
Maybe. A little bit biased
there.
If
I may be so bold.
So we'll talk about that. And then there's tons of television. We're sort of in the beginning of the mid-season of television. So a lot of shows are coming on for the first time. Some debuts, some streaming stuff, some shows returning that we like.
Yes.
We'll talk about all those and whatever else you would like to talk about here on Joel Radio.
Mm-hmm.
By you, I mean, I guess just you.
That's right.
Not the people at home. We're not going to talk about what you want to talk about.
Well, call us in the past after you've heard this.
Oh yeah.
And
well, we've been putting out on Facebook, hey, what do you want? You could do that now. Do you want to do that?
I already have.
Oh, what did people think about the Oscars?
Yeah, they have not.
Oh, okay. I could do that if you give me 20 seconds.
Well,
can you cover?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you cover while I Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
I mean, I did from the page, so you just do from yours.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll do it, but I think, I don't know, I feel like my personal page
has
a little more reach, right. Which is sad that people don't add us on Facebook, but, you know, people add us, you know.
Well, while we're saying that, why don't you add us on Facebook?
Yeah.
The Joel Radio page on Facebook. You can also, there's still a Twitter, correct? There's a...
At Joel Radio Show.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. So if you want to do that, go ahead and add us there. I'm just going to ask for what people thought of Chris Rock. Chris Rock as host.
Did you buy any Girl Scout cookies?
Yeah. How did they raise $65,000?
I don't know what that was.
I mean, it's like, okay, at $100 a box, that's still... 650 boxes, right?
Did somebody just write them a check?
I don't know.
Did Jennifer Lawrence just write them a big check? What was it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't, because it's kind of like, okay, they've got boxes, and you figure those guys probably got $100 bills in their pockets. So yeah, but it's, I mean, even at $100 a box, is my math wrong?
How many people are in that theater?
I'd say 5,000.
All right,
that's probably. Bigger than it is, probably 3,000. Okay,
a couple hundred bucks a piece from everybody. Maybe you can get up to the 65. I don't know, but yeah, they all wrote that. I don't know. Harvey Weinstein wrote a $65,000.
Well, but
check,
I mean,
and then Chris Rock shit on him.
But that's like, but why did they? But then they have this tote board. It just, that whole thing was just weird. Which is funny because that was the one bit in the show that I actually go, well, that seemed kind of light and appropriate for
sure.
The event. And the rest of the comedy was the most race-baiting, like, guilt-inducing shit I've ever...
I got a little misty and phased out a couple times. When he brought out the three little kids, was that supposed to be the accounting firm?
You know what? That one I thought was cute because the one kid got lost.
Yes,
to spot.
Yes,
and
he brought out.
But
like,
it was weird that it was like, here's the accountants, and then he was like, one of them was like Jewish, so he expected to see like,
yes,
a little.
No, it was like three Asian kids, and then he said like Mossberg or something.
Yeah, and it was like, okay, yeah. So I expected to see a little kid with like,
which was supposed to be
Payas or something. I don't know what, whatever.
The Payas.
What do the Jews have?
I expected to see
a
little Hebe.
Yeah.
With a big beard and fangs so that he can drink the blood for the goys to make the matzah. No, you know, that bit was cute, but was that supposed to be the accounting firm? Is that what it was?
I guess, because usually they trot...
Oh.
They trot...
That's always the most scintillating portion of every every Oscar telecast.
Right.
And they're like, well, these votes have been tabulated by the accounting firm.
Well, and they usually bring up a guy and he's holding a briefcase.
Deloitte and Touche.
He looks like a moneylender, and they get this guy out there, and that's what they do. But
did the Academy president come out?
The Academy president did come out, and she, you know, it's a black woman.
Oh,
I forget her name, but she gave a big speech about how
I thought black people weren't allowed in Hollywood.
That's the
president of the Academy is a black woman.
Look, if you want to break this down, we're going to get into Chris Rock and the whole thing. But here's the deal: if you want to look, when you have a year, you have to look at the movies this year before you can talk about, you know, bias and all that stuff. The movies that featured and starred African-Americans this year were generally not very good.
Yeah.
There wasn't that big, important movie like Selma or 12 Years a Slave or The Help or something.
Or a big showy performance like Ray.
Yeah, there just wasn't anything like that this year. I mean, you had Straight Out of Compton, which I told Corey on the phone last night. I said, it's probably, it's a notch better than Crazy, Sexy, Cool, the TLC story on VH1. I mean, it's not a bad movie.
It is not better than The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Well, no, we'll talk about that. That's on the agenda, for later. But yeah, it wasn't great. It was nice. You know, Concussion, which I didn't see, did not get great reviews universally. People said Will Smith was good, but okay.
Yeah.
Beasts of No Nation I had on my top movies. Where was it? I have my list of top movies. It was my... Beasts of No Nation was my number 8 movie, so it wouldn't even have made my top 5 if you were nominating Best
Picture.
So, I liked that, and I gave it, you know, some notice, but, you know, there just wasn't, you know, those kind of things weren't out there. And then they talk about, you know, so was it really racist when you have Australian after Brit after Mexican winning award after award last night? I mean, that was a little... I mean, I know that you don't consider Aussies...
No.
Outsiders, but it's
never enough.
Well, that's the thing. It's ridiculous. I mean, look...
I just read a blog piece about stop playing people off.
Yeah.
Because if you want to highlight casual racism, when the Mexican director wins, best director... Don't start putting music under him immediately.
Who was it? Him that had to do a speech to like Ride of the Valkyries was behind him.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm like, what is this guy going to invade Poland after the speech? Yeah, like what is he?
The director of The Revenant, who won last year for Birdman, wins again.
Yeah,
and then they immediately played the music on him.
Yeah, they gave him a little bit of time. Well, they had that thing with the crawl under the screen when the guy would get announced, and they put up this crawl. Right. Which was 100 miles an hour of thank yous.
Okay, well, that was also a disaster.
That was terrible.
Let's just summon the Oscars, and, you know, for many, many years as a film critic, I was contractually obligated to watch and or tweet about the Oscars.
Yes.
And it's become a burden and an ordeal.
Yeah.
It's really this self-serving, self-aggrandizing, Hollywood gets to tell how great they are on television. One night a year. I mean, not that Hollywood doesn't get enough coverage on TV, because it certainly does, but it's this big, big circle jerk where they all stand around and just slap each other on the back. And this year it had a political theme because it's an election year.
Yeah, it does.
And it was very tense and very, you know, and believe me, the Oscars have certainly had political tension in the past many times.
Yeah, there's been people
Michael,
have gone up
Michael
and tried
Moore,
to make a statement.
Michael
yeah.
Moore won and gave a speech and got booed.
Yeah.
Which now I don't think anybody would boo. You know, it's just like that's how the Oscars work. It's not just an award ceremony. It's not just about movies. It's a big political stake.
Yeah, well, it hasn't always been like that. And I mean, there's been moments, but it was like every guy had a fucking issue. Every guy had his thing. By the end, I was texting you during it, and I'm like, okay, Leo DiCaprio, okay, the goddamn, okay. So, first of all, it was black, you know, Hollywood's racist.
Right.
Chris Rock, I don't think, did a joke in the Oscar telecast, aside from maybe the Girl Scout thing and the accountant thing, that was anything but then Hollywood is racist. It's like he beat that fucking drum so hard all night. Kevin Hart comes out, does the exact same fucking speech.
Yes.
Then you get the, you know, lady
only Kevin didn't put jokes in his.
You know, Joe Biden Well, Kevin Hart doesn't put jokes in a lot of things.
Hey-o.
He should put some jokes in his movies. You motherfucking Kevin. No, okay. Here's the thing.
Somebody said last night that they thought Kevin Hart was going to bring a chalkboard out. And I said, did he also roll out a stool so he could reach the chalkboard?
And then you get Joe Biden talking about, consent and rape. Yes. And they're like, I'm fucking trying to watch an award show. What are you doing? The vice president is telling me that a woman has to consent, and I'm like, get the fuck off my TV, you asshole. Right. This isn't an after-school special. Get the fuck out of here.
Let us be glad that Hollywood is not the one that does negotiations with terrorists, because what happened was Hollywood caved to a couple tweets.
Yes.
Okay? Basically, what this whole Oscar So White controversy started, I'm sure a couple people said it before this, but Jada Pinkett Smith.
Well, that's right.
One of Hollywood's greatest actresses. As we know. One of the finest
one of the all-time greats. I mean,
it's like Orson Welles.
Yes.
The great actress, the great thespians.
She will be...
John Barrymore.
Apparently she doesn't want to collect her Irving Thalberg Award.
Yes.
For Lifetime Achievement now. Apparently she's throwing that back.
Oh my God. She threw a fit. Okay, here's what happened, okay? You want this is my read on what happened in the inside politics. Will Smith has been having some struggles in his career lately because his Scientology wacko belief system has undermined.
Will Smith is a Scientologist?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that Will Smith's a Scientologist.
He's a Scientologist, but he won't come out.
I don't know.
He's not like Cruz, in which he
He's a closeted Scientologist. He's in the closet with Scientology. He's a closet case. Scientology?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. I see what you're. I didn't know.
You were pulling a Kevin Neal in there. But look.
By the way, when they honor Jada Pinkett Smith for her Lifetime Achievement, I think Kevin Nealon should be standing right next to her to win his. But anyway, go ahead. Careers are right about there. They're neck and neck.
Not to derail the show, but...
No, it's derailed.
We'll get back to the Oscars in 1 second. The single worst commercials on television are those Xarelto commercials with Kevin Nealon and Arnold Palmer.
And a Jeff Gordon, right? Or is it Jimmy Johnson or Jeff Gordon?
It's a NASCAR guy.
I think it's Jeff Gordon.
It's a NASCAR guy.
Yeah.
They're the worst attempts at... first of all, these three guys who don't know who each other is. And they're out there and Arnold Palmer's like, I'll have an Arnold Palmer.
I know.
And then it's like, make mine a Kevin Nealon. What the fuck is a Kevin Nealon? It's very odd.
Arnold Palmer's looking at me like Chevy Chase looks like shit. That's what he's looking at Nealon like. The whole thing is like Jeff Gordon's never been on a golf course. The whole thing's bizarre.
You know what a Kevin Nealon is?
What's a Kevin Nealon?
It's two fingers of bourbon, lemonade, and half the talent of Phil Hartman. That's what that is.
I don't... It's... That those things are so bizarre. All right, let's talk.
Weirdest commercials.
All right, the Oscars. Okay, so then, all Chris Rock could do all night. And first of all, here's my review of Chris Rock. Okay, Chris Rock was funny, as Chris Rock is. Okay.
Yeah.
The problem with it was there was no other source for humor. There was nothing else to make fun of. I mean, they did the other jokes. You could say, well, he did some other the Suge Knight thing. That's not exactly that's not exactly like the most racially sensitive stuff either, is it? I mean, if you want to read into, Suge Knight is incarcerated on the balcony or...
My Facebook feed last night, I said, boy, I bet the Suge Knight material is really cracking up Jenna Rollins.
Well, yeah,
You got a room full of old white people.
Right.
And he's making Suge Knight jokes.
Well...
The whole thing was tone deaf, and it really kind of... Chris Rock was in a position, an unwinnable position.
Yeah.
He had to be... Now, you said he had been hired before the controversy.
I believe they hire these guys months out. So they're hired... Because it takes a long time to produce that show. You can Google it, but I believe he was hired months and months ago, and the nominations have only been out for 6 weeks or so. So, I mean, the nominations come out after the Globes, which I believe the nominations come out in late January or something, or... Mid-January?
They're out for a few weeks before the ceremony.
Well, do a news search for when Chris Rock was hired.
I'm looking for when Chris Rock was hired. So
he would have been hired long before
Chris Rock had had been an Oscar host before.
He had, yes.
Okay, being the Oscar host is a position that is on. Okay, years and years ago, it used to be. I think in the, you know, Bob Hope probably did it in the 40s.
I think Bob Hope and Johnny Carson did it.
They did it a lot.
A long time, yeah, for years
and
years.
And then if they don't have it, some dumb actors get up there and can't do comedy.
Well, yeah, they've done Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
And they did the best year ever, the James Franco Anne Hathaway hosting duo.
Right.
But I believe it was like, I think Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn hosted it one year. You can go through. We did this on the show before. I went through Wikipedia and found the complete list.
The complete list of
Oscar hosts. You know, Billy Crystal had his little run in the 90s. Mm-hmm. You know,
sure.
You know, Letterman had a year. I don't think.
And by the way, Billy
did
Crystal,
Leno ever do it?
Everybody loved Billy Crystal.
Everybody loved Billy Crystal
because Billy Crystal came out and did goofy songs.
Yes.
And sung and didn't really say anything terribly offensive. The problem is nobody wants an Oscar host.
Yeah, Whoopi did it.
They really shouldn't even have a host.
Well, there's award shows that don't have hosts.
They should just have the fucking presenters come
the
out.
The voice of God introduces the presenters. You know, the offstage announcer.
I thought Steve Martin was pretty good.
Yeah, Steve Martin and...
Okay, Letterman came out and did the Oscars one time.
Yeah.
And he never was let... They never allowed him to do it again.
I don't know if Letterman would have come back and done it had they even asked him.
Well, I know,
but
it was one of the more memorable Oscars.
Yeah, it was.
And you know why? Because Letterman does what Letterman does. And he pretty much lampoons Letterman has this basic thing where he makes fun of everything.
Yes.
The absurdity of all things fall under the Letterman tent. And so he just ripped the notion that they were given awards and Oprah, Uma, and all that stuff to begin with. And they never let him back in.
Well, but I always blame Oprah for that whole thing.
That she was
Oprah didn't
it.
Sell his joke.
Right.
And when Oprah does, when they do a big close-up of Oprah, and Oprah's not laughing, I mean, there is sort of I don't know if it was a quid pro quo, but when you're at that thing, and somebody makes a joke about you, your job is to sit there and laugh at your own joke. So, A, you don't look like an asshole, and B, the host doesn't look like an asshole. But in times when Oprah doesn't laugh, or, you know, Tommy Lee Jones one year, I forget who was making jokes, and Tommy Lee Jones wasn't laughing, but that was pretty famous, too, when he was sitting there and all stone-faced.
But it's a room full of people, of millionaire entertainers who take themselves way too seriously, waiting to hand each other gold trophies for being wonderful so that the money that they make on the next movie goes up because they were an Oscar winner or an Oscar nominee.
It's a giant advertisement for what they do, the movies.
Yes.
But I also feel like, you know...
And then Chris Rock comes out and tells that room full of people waiting to be awarded and saluted that they're a bunch of racists.
But should they feel so guilty, these fucking Oscar people? I mean, look, I believe it was the biggest year in box office history this year, right? I think something like that.
Probably due to ticket sales.
Yeah,
the price of tickets.
The price of tickets, but you had giant hits. You had, you know, Star Wars and Mad Max and Avengers and all these giant hit movies. Jurassic World. They had all these giant hit movies. So, you know, and some of those movies were completely inclusive. And had, you know, diversity in them.
Star Wars definitely did.
Star Wars had a black guy and a woman and all the people starring in it. And, it doesn't, the whole thing is like, just because, you know.
Star Wars also cast a beautiful black woman as a ugly toad creature, a CGI toad creature. Because
that's the dumbest thing they've ever done. You know, but yeah, I mean, it's. You know, Hollywood doesn't need to feel guilty. And it seems like once people shame them, you know, no one in Hollywood's going to stand up to Sharpton and these people who are raising it. Wow. You know, Sharpton was outside on the red carpet yelling and screaming. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh.
Yeah, Sharpton was protesting last night,
you know,
outside the Dolby Theater.
Look, as a progressive, it's a struggle. And I've been having a lot of fights lately. What's happening, the Democrats love to fight with each other. Just like Republicans are doing, too.
Yeah.
But the fight that is consistently happening right now is social justice warriors. And there's a real agitating Melissa Harris Perry on MSNBC, who I'm not a big fan of.
Yes.
She's kind of shrill and joyless.
Yes.
In a collegiate academic way. They bumped her show for a couple weeks because there were primaries.
Yes.
Like, you know, Nevada or whatever had a caucus on that Saturday. So they had bumped her weekend show for a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she wrote this letter about how she's not going to be a mammy. and a little brown bobblehead for MSNBC. And of course, they're like, well, you don't have to have a show. Goodbye.
Yeah, they suspended her, and then now she's quit. Yeah, so.
So it's like, there is obviously important work to be done here, but Chris Rock's monologue was funny for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That then they hammered it again.
It just never stopped.
Other than the Girl Scout cookies.
Every time Chris Rock walked out, he went like, "Oh, it's all white people. It's all white people. Look at all the white people in here. Look at all that.
Now, maybe,
all that white."
Now,
here's the problem with it. It's not the venue for that discussion.
Right.
You can have that discussion. That's fine. And I believe Chris Rock should. I was shocked that that's all he did. I expected him to make a joke about, you know, Oscar's so white or whatever.
Yes.
But I thought he'd move on to other things. Didn't happen.
No.
I mean, they did cut to, you know, there was a bear in the audience that, you know, was alleged, you know, supposed to be the bear from The Revenant. And what a stupid thing. Here's what the Oscars resembled. And you sort of hit on it already. But the Oscars to me was like reading somebody's Facebook. It was like reading your Facebook feed. Everybody's upset about something else, and they're going to tell you why you should feel guilty about it. You know, because here's the thing. Leonardo DiCaprio won for The Revenant, which he's very good in The Revenant. He deserved the award. It was a 6th nomination. He deserves it. But in his speech, he said, you know, he gives this nice speech, and then he says, well, you know, shooting this movie with Mother Nature, and let me just tell you that, you know, we had to move to the south, the southern hemisphere, because we couldn't find snow. So this is what we have to do, Corey. We have to stop supporting excess and waste. We have to stop global warming because you know what happened, Corey? That movie production was more difficult than it needed to be, and Leonardo DiCaprio suffered. He suffered due to global warming, Corey. He suffered on the set of global warming. There were not enough supermodels to keep him warm on the set of The Revenant. It was terrible. How dare us? How dare we end the carbon emissions? Free the titties for Kick Leo.
All right. Now,
it's ridiculous.
Okay.
This whole thing.
Now, Leo has made a couple documentaries produced. I know that's his pet issue. And you know what? What made that worse was that stupid crawl where they thanked everybody in the crawl.
Yeah.
Because that then freed up Leo
to not have to
thank anybody, and he just did a global warming.
Well,
and that actually happened a couple times. People used their speech. Sam Smith,
yeah, there's another guy.
Did an LGBT
By the way, Sam Smith, I don't know if I'm the first outwardly gay person that's ever won an Oscar. Because no costume designer or makeup person has ever been given an award, you stupid fucking cunt.
I think there might have been a point about
Did
Jodie Foster come out on the Oscars?
Okay, here's what happened today. You can look this up. This is great. The guy who wrote the screenplay for the movie
Dustin
Milk won, and he said, hey, Sam, he said this on Twitter, he said, not only are you not the first openly gay man, can you please leave my fiance alone? So apparently Sam Smith is hitting on this guy's boyfriend.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. But yeah, I mean, you can't, first of all, to think that Hollywood has never honored a gay person before Sam Smith is ridiculous. Number two, the James Bond movie ain't about gay people. It's not about the struggle to be normal and be accepted. It's a fucking action movie. Go up there and just thank the people who made your record and then go. No one needs to hear all that. Everything's out of place. People feel like that's important. It's not. It's out of place. It's annoying to me.
It's annoying to you.
But But Corey, am I not the audience for the Oscars? But that's the thing about it. It's the same thing that I tell people in comedy class. You have to know your audience and know what they're there for. And they're not there to hear your political speeches. They don't care. You know, if somebody does something and it's moving, you know, was it Tom Hanks who
thanked
his teacher who was a gay man? And that was a nice, touching moment, which we all enjoyed. This stuff is different than that. This politicizing at the Oscars is different than that. It's like, I'm going to take this time to make you all feel bad about what you're doing. And if you stop doing that, the world will be, if we could only just.
Well,
you know what would stop racism in this country, Corey?
What?
A good role for Angela Bassett that we could award her with.
Yes.
Then everyone would get along. That's the only. Sam Smith said that. He said, if we could just love gay people, if we could just, then the world would be great. And the answer is no, it wouldn't. You dumb fuck. It would not.
I'll tell you what.
It's a nice notion to come up with. It's not appropriate to give accept an award that way. It just isn't.
I'll tell you what. You're talking about what the audience wants. I have a gay marriage bit.
You do.
And it has... Now, at this point, I have to kind of cut it or rework whatever I want to talk about. Because guess what? The Supreme Court... allowed gay marriage.
Allowed gay marriage.
And you know what happened? People stopped caring.
Yeah, no one cares.
It's not actually an issue.
Nobody cares. I know.
So I now have to, this weekend I went,
but
that bit's got to go, or I got to do something different with it.
You find a lamp. You found a lamp, Corey, and you get three, and you're going to, everything they wish for at the Oscars, you just found a lamp, and you go, okay, gay people are accepted equally as straight people. Sam Smith, there you go. And we will end global warming and carbon emissions. Leo, you get that. Black people, you get all the Oscars. There you go. How has the world changed? It hasn't one fucking bit at all.
Well,
there's always going to be something that someone's going to rail about. And when everybody loves each other and there's no war, people are going to start to complain that the price of underwear is too high or something's wrong. And we'll get rid of fast food. And our kids will all of a sudden be fitness freaks and fanatics. And we'll all live to 175 fucking years old.
I'll tell you what.
And you know what? And then, but it will never, nothing will stop. Nothing will stop.
Well, I'll tell you what. It would make comedy real lame.
Well, it's just,
we'd all be doing Seinfeld's act. What's the deal with gum wrappers?
You know what? Here's the thing. Here's the thing that no one talks about.
Mm-hmm.
Poor people who are poor black people could give a fuck about who gets an Oscar. They could give a fuck about who gets an Oscar. You know, nobody cares. You know, gay people who are dying of AIDS could give a fuck about Sam Smith and his fucking thing. It's a bunch of billionaires telling me their problems. Here's the thing. You made this life for yourself where everything's perfect. You got billions of dollars. You got every model in the world's going to suck your fucking dick. So here's your problem is global warming. Go fuck yourself. Here's my problem. I got a goddamn gas bill coming up in 2 weeks that I got to pay.
Yeah.
And I need enough fucking money to pay that. That's my problem.
Well,
if I can solve that, I'll work on global warming when I solve that. When I solve that, when that's solved, I work on it. When everything's fixed in my life, I'll go ahead and worry about your goddamn global warming. I'll go on TV and yell about that. Well, that's what I'll do.
The issue for me is I don't think obviously the controversy got so much traction ahead of time that Chris Rock had to respond to it.
He did.
And I think Chris Rock probably if there hadn't been a controversy would have still had
he still would have done something
material because
yeah.
he's Chris Rock.
Yeah,
but it became
he's always talked
the
about race.
Sole focus of the
it
show.
It was the only thing they did on the show.
And what was really telling was when they did the Man on the Street segment in Compton.
Yes,
and Chris Rock asked black people in a movie theater about the Oscars, and none of them had seen Brooklyn,
right,
and any of that kind of shit. And you know what? That really got to the point and actually undermined his whole fucking argument.
Absolutely, the whole thing.
It undermined his whole fucking argument. And the argument is that the Oscars don't. You're right. The Oscars don't matter.
Black people don't give a fuck about who wins those awards. They really don't. I mean, they would be happy if a black guy won, but they could give it. They would know the difference between Bridge of Spies and Carol. And the fucking Revenant.
This Oscars really pushed me to the brink last night. I actually turned to my wife and had like a real like revelation.
Yeah.
What I can't stand about this bullshit is that black people play team.
Yeah.
Now, that has been a historical necessity.
Yeah.
When they had been excluded from almost every facet of American life. I get all those political realities. But the truth of the fucking matter is not one white person gives a fuck about Straight Outta Compton. Maybe a couple. But that I'm sorry. I'm gonna dear black people. Anyone who actually listens to this show, any of my wonderful friends in comedy that might tune into this program, yeah. I'm gonna tell you an honest truth that most white people won't tell you. Chuck D don't mean a fucking thing.
Well, that's true, but okay, go ahead, I'll let you finish.
It's Eazy-E is not a transformative figure in our lives unless you're Nate Fritzen. And then it's very important. Or Jeff Horst. All right, I know.
This is too inside.
I know it's too inside.
Don't.
But those are very, like, you know what I'm saying? The fact that Straight Outta Compton, which was a kind of a mediocre biopic, didn't get nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
It's because it was a mediocre biopic.
It was a mediocre biopic.
You know what?
It was,
the same fucking goes for Creed.
Listen. Hey, listen. One day,
which is
one
a mediocre
day,
Rocky movie.
One day, America will come together and elect a black man president, and that will be a great day that will solve all race problems in America.
I do that bit, too.
Exactly.
And then by the way, I do that bit about how,
one day.
I do a bit about, look how united we are after Obama. Right. And that gets a laugh, but I got a boo.
One day a woman will be president, like in about 11 months from now.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Right.
Come on, people. Come on. Come on.
No, it's
come on.
Indignation is addictive to people.
Well, yeah.
Okay, now, the movie that actually won the Best Picture, Spotlight,
yes,
which is a really great movie. It's a fine film. And it talks about something that actually is fucking important. And that is journalism being allowed to investigate important things, talk to power, and it's about children being abused sexually, which is what, at the bottom line, a society does not have a right to exist if it cannot protect children from being abused. That's the most important thing.
And the director or whoever gave a few words to that, and I was fine with that.
Right.
That's what the movie was about. I'm fine with that.
Sure.
You know, The Revenant was not about global warming, Leo, you dumb fuck.
No.
And so I was fine with that, and Spotlight's a good movie, and no one's saying that it didn't deserve to win or anything. But yeah, I mean, there is this thing that, like, you know, if everyone just stopped, you know, it's like people, when a black person or a group of people... let's face it. Everything at this point is a small group of people. You know what I mean? There is no giant. You know, there is no en masse. You know, Americans don't agree in a percentage greater than 30% anymore with anything. You know, everybody's fractured and everything's broken up.
Maybe,
and there is no
maybe
massive
about chocolate chip cookies.
Okay, but my point is that if people just went, like, you know, people need to ignore the outrage. That there's too much outrage, and there's outrage all the time about everything. And when it's black people mad at whites, it's the whiteies that turn and go, oh my God, what did we do here? You know, that's, you get the feeling when these Oscar protests happen, that the white people turn around and were like, oh my God, did we really just do that? Did we blah, blah, blah? Did we blah, blah? But these Oscars, the way that people are nominated and the way that people are, you know, this group of people that are elected or you know, nominated every year, it's not like somebody sat down and said, black people, scratch their name out, scratch their name. That's not how this works. It's a committee of people that vote on these things. It's not like you can keep black people out of the Oscars. You know, there's not one person that can do that. It's thousands and thousands of people who decide who gets these nominations.
And so you
can't sit there and go, well, is it institutional or is it, you know, is it just one person keeping somebody down? It's not the case.
So,
or even a small group of people.
So, of course, the response that the Academy had was that they decided to throw out a bunch of older white people from their vote. They revoked the voting rights.
Is that what they did?
Yes.
Because they hadn't been active or something?
And so, like, Bill Mummy, who was in Austin Space.
Yeah.
And, you know, has had a long career.
Yeah.
And he was a child actor and was, like, listed all the directors he worked for in the 50s and stuff.
Right.
And has been in, you know, does not get a lot of movie roles anymore.
Yeah.
If any, was like, oh, so I don't get to vote anymore. I don't have any expertise on what a movie is.
Does that mean they're dropped from the Academy? Is that what the...
They just took away the voting rights for if you hadn't... Right. So their answer... Their answer to let's increase diversity is to restrict somebody's rights.
Well, I know that they're saying, like, we're going to have younger people vote in the Academy and this kind of stuff. But I don't really know how that all breaks
down. But that was their answer. They said,
well,
let's get rid of old white men because, one, they're innately racist. They must clearly be.
What about if they, you know, but here's the thing, you know, I would even go and just thinking off the top of my head, like, well, maybe we should let the public nominate people, but I don't think that's going to get you any more diversity.
No, you know,
in this year, but of course, if you look at critics polls, it's like critics polls, which, you know, critics are all different. None of these movies make it on that. There's nothing that is, no one was kept down this year. There's no movie that, you know, oh boy, well, they got robbed. You know, you can't make that claim this year. It's ridiculous.
Well, I actually think that this year's list was good.
Yeah.
And very reflect. Some years there's movies that are just like, that has no right. business being on okay. this. Shakespeare in Love won an Oscar.
Sure, yeah, that was a piece of shit. Yeah.
We could
yeah.
list it.
It seems like that's kind of over, though, that self-important Oscar right. stuff. I mean, something like Birdman last year, I think, got a little too much hype, but not for like a political reason or anything. Bought it. I think people just...
No, well, know. We went over that last yeah. year. People loved Birdman because it was about Hollywood, or it was about acting.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, you know what I mean? It was a showbiz thing.
But, you know, I felt like watching the awards when the one movie that won an award where people went like... I kind of felt like myself, and I felt like, you know, people watching it was Ex Machina. When that won for Best Visual Effects, people were like, oh, yeah, that was fucking great.
Ex Machina.
That was proof that movie was really, really good
yeah.
to have beaten Mad Max, which won, I think, almost every other technical award.
Well, I think Ex Machina was a great movie.
Yeah, I had it as number three last year.
And I would have, listened to our last show.
Yeah, exactly.
We both
that's the point is,
Ex Machina.
But
I would have dumped Brooklyn.
Sure, in favor absolutely.
But
sure.
But again, what we're getting down to is semantics.
Yeah.
Because basically what we're saying is the Oscars, some people have refused to understand the premise of the Oscars.
Yeah.
There's two premises. One, to make rich people richer.
Yeah.
Because an Oscar nomination means your movie gets more box office. That's the real answer. The number two is to give the whole business respectability.
Sure.
Because otherwise it's really just a channel to sell soda and popcorn
yeah.
to fat fucking Americans.
And most of what Hollywood does is shit.
Yes.
I mean, just in a pure numerical sense.
What is
if you averaged out if you went to the Metacritic of every movie made last year,
mm-hmm. Metacritic?
Would that be a 55 or something?
Yeah,
I mean, it would not be high.
That's a great question.
Yeah,
about,
I mean, like, what is the average Hollywood film?
As a film critic, I could tell you this right now. You would spend the first 3 months, it's kind of like tax day. How like you? There's like a you have to work up until
it's in May tax freedom day
till May to pay your taxes,
and after at whatever day in May is tax freedom day, up till that point you didn't get to keep any of that money. It
yes,
all went to the government,
yes.
And after that it's all yours.
So kind of in the movies,
yeah.
There's not a good movie released until like the end of April.
Yeah,
January and February are garbage. All the dumb kids movies and all the B-rate cartoons. You know, like the one where the penguins surf. You know what I mean? All that garbage.
Surfs up.
All of that garbage comes out
yeah.
from January till like May, March,
well,
April.
Yeah,
May.
I mean.
The late April. And now we're going to have like Batman, Superman.
Well, we had Deadpool. And, we had Batman, right, Superman. Right.
But Deadpool is by no means considered an A
no, but it's
grade
a,
movie.
It's people are going to see
it's
it.
It's a movie people liked. There's a gap between what people like.
Well, that's what the Oscars is about. It's like, hey, we don't just make fucking giant robot movies. You know, we make these things mm-hmm. that are important, you know.
And by the way,
movies about issues.
Okay, but when
that's what the Oscars
but
really
when
is.
We talk about comedy yeah. and stuff like that, okay, Gabriel Iglesias sells out
yeah.
and does theater tours and makes a lot of money. Absolutely zero individuals who know what the fuck they're talking about think he's the best
right,
comic.
Exactly, yeah.
Right?
Carrot Top.
Right,
yeah.
right, right.
Right.
And again, but people are like, well, my bad taste is the same as yours. No, it's fucking not.
Well, they...
We have to judge. There has to be critical.
There is. And...
There has to be critical standards. Aesthetic criteria have to be applied. And that's what the Oscars should do
yeah.
if they're doing it right. And so when Spotlight won, instead of the fucking shitty Revenant,
yeah.
I went, yay.
Well, first of all, Revenant was good. You haven't seen it. Did you see Revenant yet?
Well,
Revenant's good. It is not.
I'm over NR2.
There is
a little bit of a fun.
Well, first of all, it's 500 times better than Birdman.
Okay.
And I think you like Birdman, but it's 500 times better than that. So if you like all Birdman, right. you'll like Revenant. It's 500 times better than that. At least for me.
500 times better.
It's 500 times better.
So
I don't know. That's probably... That could be an exaggeration on my part.
Well, yes.
Revenant's a good movie. It's
well,
just not...
Okay.
Look, I hate that fucking...
Did you notice how The Hateful Eight didn't get an Academy Award
well,
nomination?
Well, and Ennio Morricone won.
Okay, but it didn't get a best... Ennio Morricone
It didn't
won.
Win. Jennifer Jason Leigh was nominated and Ennio Morricone for the soundtrack, and that's the only nominations that
Look,
movie got. It didn't deserve them.
And guess what? The music was good in Hateful Eight.
Yes.
It's Ennio Morricone.
Yeah.
That was the best part of the movie,
but that,
was
but
the music.
That also... But the problem with me in that is that, first of all, Ennio Morricone is one of the all-time greats.
Yes.
I believe he already won a Lifetime Achievement Award
sure
from the Oscars.
Yes.
But that music in there was from other sources. It wasn't all original.
I
movie.
Know it was.
And actually,
Quentin likes to do that.
And actually, and that's fine. Look, I'm fine giving him the award. Okay, but actually, that movie, that the in the Ennio, some of the Ennio Morricone in there was not written for the movie. Some of it was, you know. So it's a little bit of a bullshit award, but I'm fine giving it to him. Fine.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah.
Well, if John Williams had won for Star Wars, that would be a soundtrack. That would
there,
be.
There is some old Star Wars.
That would
Wars
be a
movies,
theme that
sure.
he wrote in 1975.
Well, there's new enough new music for
sure.
Force Awakens. But anyway, all right. So anything else Oscar wise we should talk about? I mean, look, I was just annoyed with the whole thing. I really felt like when it was over, that. And here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to make a proclamation right now. If I can do that, is that all right? Can I have a soapbox for a minute? Okay.
You've already had many before. Go ahead.
I'm done watching the Oscars.
All right.
I'm done. So, you know, when next week's Oscars, I'm not watching.
No.
The Oscars in July, I'm not watching. I'll give it like a year before I watch another Oscars. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm going to do. I'm saying that right here.
But I used to actually enjoy the Oscars.
No, I did not enjoy last night at all.
And this felt like
on any level.
This felt like a dirge.
Yes. Like Chris Rock could have done that opening bit as a guest on Stephen Colbert's show. He could, you know what I mean? He could have done that same bit somewhere and it would have been funny and it would have been fine. But it was that whole thing was wrong. It was done poorly. Chris Rock was fine. It actually
really did feel like a John Oliver segment or something.
It just didn't.
Louis C.K. was actually.
Well, that was a nice speech. He was actually funny and good.
And guess what? Hey, Louis was funnier.
Well, they're talking about Louis hosting an Oscars. I've read that today.
Hold on. Kevin Hart sells out. I love this.
Yeah,
that's another thing. I don't care. Fox News guys always go, well, they get ratings. In the 800 to dead demo.
Well, that's fine.
And Kevin Hart sells out arenas. But Louis C.K. is funnier than Kevin Hart.
Well.
And Kevin couldn't even get a joke into his.
Kevin Hart has an audience.
Yes.
And they, you know.
So anyway, Louis.
Well, listen.
But Louis' point about the documentary filmmakers not making any money was as politically on point as everybody else.
Right.
But he did it in a way that didn't feel like a scolding, turgid,
right.
You know, beating up of people.
Here's a stat that applies to Kevin Hart. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because first of all, the argument in general is going to be the argument in general is, you know, black people, if you want your, you know, if you want one of your movies to win, go to the fucking things or make something better. You can make that argument. Here's the point. This is about television. And this was a stat. Yes. This stat has got to be 10, 15, maybe even 20 years old now. But it's a great stat. I heard this. That did you know that when I heard this stat, the top rated show for black people. That was on a network.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't believe it was like it just didn't have black people in it. That could have been the stat as well. Like it was the top rated show amongst black people that didn't star a black person. So in other words, what do black people like in mainstream entertainment? The top rated show amongst African Americans, when I heard this stat, of all of television when this show was airing, was Walker, Texas Ranger. So, I mean, look. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Okay, now it's again back to what I was talking about when the.
But
with,
that's.
But I was talking about the man in the street segment. It's about black people are like, why don't we get more Oscar nominations?
Yeah.
Well, your tastes don't really reflect the tastes of mainstream America, and maybe that's not fair, and maybe that's not right, but. On the other hand, I don't feel like really arty filmmaking reflects the taste of black America.
No, and it's only... Okay,
Empire is a huge hit show.
Yeah.
It's a huge hit show in the African-American community where everybody watches it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't get a bleep. It doesn't get a blip on the radar.
Well, and that's the only black movies that really get Oscar nominated are the ones that white people embrace.
Yes.
Like 12 Years a Slave... and Selma and that kind of stuff, where white people go crazy for them, and then it's really, you know what
wins? It's never just stories about black America. It's like how bad white people were to black people.
Yeah, that's
those are the
true,
ones
that's
that
true.
Win. That's how horrible racism is.
Well, it's ultimate. Look, here's the thing, and look, God, I have no problem with, you know, I thought 12 Years a Slave was a piece of shit. I hated that movie. I didn't enjoy it. It was hard to watch.
It's not going to last. It's not going to last a lifetime. Okay, no one's going to care about that in 5 minutes. If Mad Max had won the Oscar this year, it would be great.
Yeah.
Spotlight, as good as it is, I don't feel 5 years from now anyone's going to remember.
No, it's just another movie.
And I thought Spotlight was good and deserved the award, but I don't think it's going to last.
But, you know, ultimately, here's the thing, you know. It's 10% of America.
Uh-huh.
And, you know...
Empire was the second rated show behind Sunday Night Football.
Okay.
With a 7.1 rating.
Great.
Big Bang Theory had a 5.6.
That's great.
Everything else was NFL.
But, I mean, you know, ultimately, though, Empire is not winning Emmys or Golden Globes in all likelihood.
How many?
I think it gets nominations, right? They nominate.
No, the number eight, Modern Family. How many black people watch Modern Family?
Very few. Do you have this actual stat?
Yeah, this is last year's Nielsen's.
And this is but this is the black people Nielsen's. You have it broken down by ethnicity?
No, this is all ratings.
No, I understand that. But okay. But you don't know how many black people watch Big Bang Theory.
No.
That's a rhetorical question.
Number 25 is Blackish. I'm just looking at African American.
So which show? Yeah, has a lot of African Americans.
You know. So I mean, the success of Empire is great because they found a show that the entire African American community watches, and obviously other people are watching.
Can you look up? Can you look up a show for me?
Yeah.
Girls with Big Asses Date Rap Stars. It's on VH1.
Oh, that's a great show.
There's that one, and then I think there's...
By the way, the number 96, the number 46 on this list is Big Bang Theory 9 p.m. Like, Big Bang Theory actually charts, like, 3 times for different, like, airings.
Can you look up, Corey? There's another show on there if you can look up.
Two Broke Girls is the number 35 highest rated show. I find that show to be, like, torture. To watch a minute of Two Broke Girls breaks my spirit. I mean, you know, please.
Can you look up I Had Dwayne's Wayne's Baby? Please follow me around with the camera. It's on. I forget what channel that's on. It's on. It's in. Look, can you find where that is?
All I know is that white folk, if there is such a thing to, you know, identify everybody as people, if we insist on classification for everybody, are not a monolith.
No.
The white people that are watching Fuller House are dead to me.
Boy, oh boy.
Do you know what I'm saying?
That's
if you're an adult.
That's a can of worms right there.
If you're an adult and you're watching Fuller House on Netflix and you, I had a guy who writes for a magazine, a local website, a popular local website posted a link to like, oh, look at all the bad reviews Fuller House is going. He goes, oh, gee, that's disappointing. I was looking forward to this.
Yeah.
And I went, you were looking forward to, what were you fucking looking forward to?
Well,
you're a grown man. Were you looking forward to?
I have not seen Fuller House.
But
should almost be like a button. Like, here's the thing. Here's the movie plot. I'm going to give you a movie, but steal my movie plot. I'm giving you, here's the thing, Corey. I like to do this sometimes for our fans. I'm giving you $1 million right now.
Okay,
if you're listening to this show, I'm giving you $1 million.
Yes.
Make a show so dumb that when you push a button on the thing, like, we'll clean out all the dummies from society.
Okay.
It's a sci-fi, but it's a Black Mirror plot. Yeah. If you make Black Mirror, here's your plot. Mm-hmm. You make a show so stupid that when somebody goes to watch it, that they're, like, evaporated from the face of the planet. That's your sci-fi. That's how we cleanse the nation.
I think Adam Carolla said that, like, Oakland Raiders game should be, like, a big sting operation. Like, the cops should just show up, because they're like, you'll just round up a lot of people that have broken into cars and owed child support payments.
It's just exactly that. But look, I mean, if you're mad about Fuller House.
Right.
I'm going to do it mathematically. Fuller House is a terrible show.
Yes.
That is the sequel to the worst show ever made.
Yes.
To me, that works logically. It's not like they took something that was great and they made
What is the OT?
The OT is the post-game show for Fox Football.
Okay, that's why it's the number 6 show.
It's on at like 7.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when the late games end on Fox, they do.
Maybe what I can glean from last year's Nielsen's is that black people are still watching TV.
Well, I'm gleaning that Kurt Menefee is one of the biggest television stars in the country.
Well, okay, obviously football, right. And Jim Brown, or, you know. But I literally. But,
yeah.
In terms of like, I'm just saying in terms of like, are African Americans streaming as much?
I don't know.
Because every white person's got to tell me about fucking making a murderer. I got to hear about that.
Oh, yeah. The whiteies went crazy.
Every NPR Trader Joe's shopping bitch I know.
They're all upset.
Has got to tell me about that stuff.
They're all upset.
There's a white man in jail. We must get him out. We must free the one white guy on a murder run.
Oh, let me set down my Greek yogurt to tweet about how awful this is that the man is in prison. That's basically.
And by the way, that better be a Faye Greek yogurt, okay?
Absolutely. I'm going to. Hold on. Can you believe
none
that?
None of this
Dannon
bullshit.
Wait
you
a
better
minute.
Get an Oikos Greek yogurt.
Where's my iPhone 6 in the spark in the glittery cover? I need to quickly talk about injustice.
Let
me grab that.
That's right.
Let me grab that when we talk about inequality.
Look, people are passing off Dan and his Greek yogurt, okay? Faye's the real Greek yogurt. Let's get that shit right.
White people are so funny.
Well, they're ridiculous.
They're so ridiculous.
Let's have a kale.
So stupid.
Let's have some kale chips.
Yeah, please.
Nobody wants to eat kale as a real product. Why do you want to fuck up a chip?
All right. So, anything else from the Oscars? I mean,
Bring back George Schlatter as the producer.
No, I don't know. Well, do you want any tits? Any good tits at the Oscars, Corey?
You know what tits were crazy was the pregame show.
See, I didn't even see that.
Oh, that's because.
Well, you know what? Because the Oscars is.
That's because you are not.
I'm not married.
You're not married.
But it's also the Oscars are 3.5 hours long already. I can't sit there and watch the pregame show.
Oh, no.
But who had nice tits, Corey? Give us the rundown. That's what people care about on this show.
Well, okay. Olivia Wilde.
Olivia Wilde's all right. Vinyl, which we're going to talk about later.
She had the crazy,
side. She had a strappy thing with the sides hanging out. I saw those.
Let's see. Wait, hold
she
on.
Went out there. Sofia Vergara, I saw her. She gave out an award.
Look, that's like saying, what's a beautiful coastline? You know, the Amalfi Coast.
Sofia Vergara out.
Come on. Sofia Vergara is just a given. I mean, those are always good.
There wasn't a whole lot of. It wasn't as much cleavage as maybe in the past.
Not as cleave heavy.
There wasn't the outrageous outfits that you used to see.
No,
in
you know,
past.
Everybody's gotten a stylist, and they're all kind of. Because you know why? Because there's a fucking industry of yentas
that tell you.
Margaret Cho's going to be shitting on people tonight on the Oscars, so they all get personal stylists and try not to look stupid.
Nobody really puts it out there too much anymore.
There's no Lena Dunham's.
Well, it's also, you know, it was a very serious Oscars.
Yeah, it was.
God forbid you show, you know, because, you know, look, here's the thing, Corey. This is my theory, and this is just me. I'm not a woman. I'm not in a position to make this decision. But if you think that somehow we've angered black people or we've somehow upset them and angered them, why not at least ingratiate ourselves to them in some way by showing as much white girl tit as we possibly can? Why not trot out the big asses, Corey? If anything's going to make black people happy, it should be a chunky white ass.
Rachel McAdams ain't got nothing to really offer in that department. So, I mean, you know, she's trying.
Look. All right, listen. How about...
Yeah, you know, nobody even really looked...
All right, how about this? Can we send Common home with Kate Winslet? Just as a little peace offering. Just go ahead and have a night with her. You'll enjoy that.
I don't even want to look at Lady Gaga's. I don't even want to look I don't even want to look at Lady Gaga's.
Look, I don't even want to... Yeah, and her whole thing with the rape victims and stuff. Look, I'm fine with... You know,
yeah.
I don't want
Charlotte that. Rampling was a real piece
I don't
of
want
ass
that
last night.
Oh, jeez, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me with that one? Oh.
Which is the Mara sister that looks like she's never had 1 second of fun in her life? Rooney Mara.
I think Rooney Mara.
Kate Mara
is the
party Mara. Kate's the good.
Rooney was the one that was in Carol. So
Heidi Klum had some.
Well, she's.
But that was all the red carpet. Like these people on the red carpet.
They're not
on the show.
They're not on the show. Yeah.
Jennifer Jason. This was funny. We were watching the red carpet cover.
I didn't see her come in.
Jennifer Jason Leigh came in and didn't have any makeup on.
Oh.
And then like. Someone must have grabbed her because she had lipstick on like at the next interview.
Like
she came up to Ryan Seacrest without any makeup on. Right. And then by the time she got to E, they would like slap some shit on her face.
And what is this thing? You can't ask a woman what she's wearing on the red carpet.
Oh, for fuck.
I know. Just stop.
That's the whole point of the goddamn thing.
Stop the insanity.
There's a whole industry of yentas. Right.
Do I have to put the Jolies together and have a fun award show?
There you go.
Do I have to put that together, Corey, and I can just nominate? All right. All right, come on. Who else? Who else look good? You got anybody else on there?
They're not. Not Mindy Kaling.
No.
Boy, no, I'm looking at a whole list, and then they're not. Nobody's really ringing the bell here.
Somebody said Amy Poehler was the worst dressed.
Oh, she had a weird thing.
She had
on,
a weird flower
I
thing.
I think Reese Witherspoon looked cute.
Well, that when Reese Witherspoon and Kate Winslet were out there, I sent Corey a picture. I took a picture of the TV and went like, "There's our dates, Corey. There's our." Either of them, both of them, evergreen, and always. You know, they always show up. You know, they're always in the top five, right?
Yeah.
Those two?
Yeah.
They're always.
Kate Winslet must have a stylist who takes care of her.
Sure. But she just, you know.
Okay. Hold on. Now I have a late breaking info here from an eyewitness. Now, a couple of our friends were actually in L.A. at the Comedy Store.
Yeah, I heard that
this
too,
week.
Yeah,
and
people.
Chris Rock came in and was workshopping his Oscar model.
Yes.
So this is from our friend Jeff Horse.
Yeah.
Who says he actually has an audio link. He made a lot of fun. He made fun and had Jada a lot more about Jada, and let's see.
I saw a thing he put up. He said that, but does he have actually audio of the Chris Rock thing?
He says he has audio of Chris Rock.
That's not doing us any good right now.
I know, but
okay. Well, I'm sure that will surface.
He says for Jada, I remember him saying that she did not get an invite, but if she did, it would have been under the name Plus One.
Okay. That's pretty good.
That would have been.
But his line about like Jada Pinkett Smith deserved to be there like he deserves to be in Rihanna's panties, I didn't think that was a very good joke. You know what I mean? I thought he was going to say something like Jada Pinkett Smith deserves to be here like I deserve to be in the NBA Finals or something.
Right.
Would have been a better joke, a stronger
and
joke.
And also he's.
Turning it into like a sexual thing with a woman, I thought kind of threw that joke in the gutter. I thought it had promise and I didn't care for the punchline.
Chris Rock also said, why is Will Smith upset about the movie Concussion? It's a movie about a damn headache. It took an African-American doctor to come and teach America people that football hurts. So there you go. There's some of the other stuff. I think he probably would have done better targeting more people specifically. But, you know.
Okay.
All right. Enough about the Oscars.
Enough Oscars.
Talk about television, another wonderful.
Well, I want to tell a story about something happened to me last week, which was very cool.
Okay.
If I can do that real quick.
Sure.
I was in. I went to Cleveland, Ohio, last week.
Well, that's where all the cool stuff happens.
Well, cool things happened to me in Cleveland, Ohio.
I was on a bus ride once in a Greyhound.
Yeah.
And at the Cleveland bus stop, which by the way looks like 1958 in there.
I'm sure it does.
They still had the colored fountain.
Yeah, they still.
Yeah. No, but it was like they had the little booths with the TVs in them. Like you sit down, you know, you put a quarter,
put
in
a quarter
TV.
In and watch TV.
Yeah. Anyway, the bus driver goes, "This is Cleveland, and everyone will change here."
One day we will.
I'm like, how will we change? What is the change inside?
What an optimistic bus driver.
Yes.
So I went there, and I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Well, first of all, I was going to see Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band on Tuesday, as I've gone to. Yeah. They're doing their River Tour across the United States and Canada.
Right.
And I had already been to Toronto and Chicago for this tour and had a good time at those. So I'm going to Cleveland, but I go in a day early because I want to go to the Hall of Fame. So I booked a hotel for 2 days. So I go, and I'd been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but they change it so frequently that it's good to go. They have rotating exhibits, you know. So I go there, and I'm having a good time. I'm walking around, and, you know, the Beatles stuff was greatly improved from last time. That was really, for me, the most exciting thing. They had a collection of Graham Nash stuff that Graham, you know, from Crosby, Stills, and Nash and the Hollies, the stuff that he's, you know, he's gathered up all this stuff from Joni Mitchell and Neil Young and all these people who were his, you know, his peers and stuff.
Okay.
And it's all pretty cool. He had some Beach Boys stuff.
The Graham Nash collection.
Some acetate records of very rare and stuff.
Was that the Beach Boys stuff you showed me, or was that the...
No, that was the standard Beach Boys stuff. But Graham Nash had a couple Beach Boys things there. But anyway, the thing about Graham Nash is, like, he also had Kennedy assassination stuff. He had a piece of the Grassy Knoll fence because he's into that. And then he also had 9/11 conspiracy stuff. And it was all in, like, the same exhibit. It was very odd.
All right. Not to unwrap the whole Kennedy thing.
Yeah.
What would the fence have to do with it?
Like, I don't know. But there was a piece of fence that they were tearing down, the white picket fence, and somehow it ended up, Graham Nash owned a piece of it.
It wasn't like this is the notch in the fence.
No, it's not. He was just like, this is what... And then I'm reading the thing, and I'm like, why would he have this? And the thing said, many people believe that a shooter was on the grassy knoll, and this would be... So there was that, and then there was, like, books about Kennedy, and I was like, why is this in with Neil Young's hat from Woodstock? But yet, there it is. So anyway, that was a little bizarre. So the Graham Nash stuff was okay. It wasn't great. The main exhibit, which is at the top, the rotating exhibit, the last two floors... was the photography of Herb Ritts, who was a guy who did a bunch of album covers and Rolling Stones and stuff. He died of AIDS at the age of 50, so he's young. And he's a great photographer, but it's a looking at fucking pictures. There really wasn't much to it. Bunch of fucking pictures. So I'm real excited about, you know, and I saw some Bowie. Not a lot of Bowie stuff. I sent you pictures of it. It's a few of his suits from stage, some Ziggy era stuff, and cool, you know. But the Beatles stuff.
I kind of wish I had gone to. There was like a touring Bowie exhibit, although it was in Chicago. I think it came here. But
Those things are cool, though. If you get a chance to see any of those, they're cool. Because the one time I had been, I saw Bruce Springsteen's personal collection, and it was all of his guitars, and he had, you know, most of the stuff that he wore on his album covers, his clothing, and all really neat stuff, and all of his handwritten lyric sheets were all there to read. It was very, very cool. But anyway, so I spent most time in the Beatles room because they had, since I'd been there. The John Lennon stuff, there was a John Lennon museum. Do you know where the John Lennon museum was, Corey Hall? In the world. It could be anywhere in the world. You would have a John Lennon museum where people could go and look at John Lennon stuff. Where would you put that geographically? Where would you put that?
Decatur, Indiana.
Okay. No.
Okay.
How about Saitama, Japan?
Oh, okay.
It was actually part of the Saitama Super Arena, which was the home of the Pride Fighting Championships. They had the John Lennon Museum, I guess because Yoko's from Japan and they wanted a John Lennon Museum.
No,
so all of John's stuff was in there. Well, they closed the John Lennon Museum.
The bastards.
So a lot of the John Lennon Museum stuff is now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which was great because I had never seen it. So I got to see John's acoustic. That, you know, he picked up in 64, the Gibson J160E, which he later used on stuff like, you know, like he used it. Well, I know it's technical, but Beatles guys will get this. And, you know, he used that on stuff like Give Peace a Chance. You know, that was his main acoustic guitar. His Epiphone Casino that he played at the rooftop concert was there. He used that for years, but that was probably the most famous use of that. And they had his second Rickenbacker, I forget the model name, but the little short scale Rickenbacker that was the British Invasion guitar. That was there as well. All really cool stuff. They had for years, they own, I believe, the Sgt. Pepper suit that John wore. So that's very cool to see that. And a lot of really neat stuff. Not a lot of George stuff. There was a George guitar last time I was there. I don't know what happened to that. But, you know, what happens is people loan stuff to the museum. And so it comes on loan and then it leaves and whatever. And then they had Ringo's main... The main drum kit that Ringo owned in his life. You know, I think he acquired it in 64 or something. The Oyster, Pearl Oyster Ringo guitar. You know, great. Great to see those. You know, amazing. Seeing Ringo's drum kit, it's in glass.
Yeah.
Really cool. They have the Mellotron that
was
used.
What kind of kit was Ringo in?
Ringo used a Ludwig kit.
Ludwig, okay.
It was a Ludwig kit, yeah. You trying to stump me now, motherfucker?
No.
You trying to stump me?
Just asking.
Look, I have books. I have books.
I understand.
I have books about their Fairchild compressor that the Beatles used at Abbey Road. So I'm looking at all this, and it was cool, and I walked around and looked at the Herbert stuff, and I came back.
I understand the depths of your loneliness.
And I come back.
I understand.
Motherfucker. Go fuck yourself.
The profound depths of your loneliness.
And I'm looking at the Beatles stuff and it's all great. And then I'm ready to leave the museum. I'd sort of seen most of it. I said, let me go look at the Beatles stuff again. I may never see this. This stuff is on loan. Yoko could take the John stuff away. I may never see this.
Sure.
I mean, I literally have books with that stuff in it, with giant passes. Let's go in there, take my own pictures, all that. So I walk back into it's the Beatles Stones room. It's like kind of the biggest room there. Not a lot of Stone stuff. Somebody I talked to said there was a Stones exhibit that was rotating where they had lots of stuff, but it was just kind of...
And the Stones are like...
Some Mick Jagger outfits. There was no guitars. There was not a lot of...
Where's me check, mate?
Yeah, well, there wasn't a lot of...
Write me a...
Wasn't a lot of Stones stuff.
Put a couple more zeros on it. we'll get rotten on it.
Not a lot of Stones stuff. Yeah. And maybe the guys that are still alive have less stuff exhibited. Maybe that's true, too.
Yeah,
the dead guys don't need that stuff anymore.
It's all in Charlie Watts' house.
Yeah. So I go back into the Beatles room, and I walk back to Ringo's kit, and I see a guy standing there, and he's wearing a little cap and glasses. It looks kind of familiar to me, and I go, holy shit, that's Charlie Giordano, the organist for the E Street Band.
Well,
and I'm like,
mackerel.
Well, fucking gay. Okay. So I walk right up to him, and I say hi to him, and then we're talking, and I notice there's a handler. Mm-hmm. There's a handler kind of floating around, and I go, oh, okay, I don't want to bother. I go, it's okay that I didn't. He's like, yeah, you're okay to talk. I go, oh, I know the museum's closing early, because I'm assuming, like, Bruce is coming. I go, is, like, Bruce coming? And he's like, no. I'm like, okay, so I gotta try. I turn around. There's Jake Clemens, saxophonist for the E Street Band.
Okay.
He's Clarence Clemens' nephew. He's, playing. I go up to Jake. I'm talking to Jake, telling him. We had a nice little talk, right? Real nice guy. And then I turn around, and then Gary Talent's there. Now, the thing about Gary Talent, the bass player for the E Street Band, is he's actually in the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Gary is actually, the other guys are replacements for the guys who died, Charlie and Jake, when Clarence and Danny Federici
died. Who's going to replace the Springsteen fans when they start dying?
Oh, no, they're... One guy might have died at the Toronto concert behind me. There was a big fat guy who passed out towards the end. He might have dropped dead right then. But then I see, and actually I didn't talk to Gary Talent, because Gary's really into gear from what I know about him. And he was getting kind of a guided tour. And I didn't want to take pictures and be kind of a nerd, and cause a big scene. Because they were being left alone by the fans that were there. Maybe people didn't recognize him. It's not like it was Bruce.
No, it was the three non-famous members of the industry.
Well, you could say. I mean, actually, Jake Clemens is pretty conspicuous. He's a big, like, giant, tall guy with an afro.
People would recognize Max Weinberg because he was on Conan.
And they might recognize Stevie Van Zandt and Bruce, obviously. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
you picked the three.
Well, those were the guys that chose to go to the museum that day.
Like, one time the rhythm section of Aerosmith came in when I was working at Border.
Yeah.
Which is like Tom Hamilton and Joey Kramer.
Yeah, yeah, that could
be. But not Joe Perry.
Yeah, not Joe Perry.
Steve Tyler came in on his own later.
Oh, okay.
But, like, they were in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
And, like, it was like the bass.
Well, it was the middle of the day at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right, but it was like the bass player for Aerosmith. Yeah. And they were kind of walking around like.
Yeah.
Expecting to be recognized, and people were like, and their agent was kind of like, so we got the guys from, like, okay, cool. Yeah. It was like nobody made it.
Nobody bothered the E Street guys, as far as I could tell. And I certainly talked to him, but tried not to bother him. But that was very cool, because here I am in a room, my two favorite bands, the Beatles and E Street. And here's the E Street guys the Beatle room. It was crazy.
My head almost exploded. As far as I know, you're
it's wild.
Your E Street fascination has been fairly recent.
No, dude, that's where you're wrong.
All right, because I never heard you talk about
it. Well, here's the thing about my appreciation for Bruce and E Street was when I was a kid and through high school. And basically in the 90s, I wasn't really a fan. I didn't really follow Bruce's career at all. It wasn't until a few years ago that I actually started going to shows. I wanted to go to shows
in the
80s. Was
the first time you got a prostate exam? When do you begin to become?
What do you think they put on Thunder Road?
Yeah.
And the guy sticks his finger up your asshole.
Thunder,
and then all of a sudden, right? Yeah,
and then he puts a finger in
there. They put on Adam Raised a Cane and they probe your anus. Listen, Bruce puts on.
You're getting a colonoscopy and it's 57 channels and nothing.
I was not a fan, but you know what?
No, I never heard you talk about this.
Here's the thing. I had a conversation.
The last year or two.
I had a conversation with a guy that we know named Jeff Dwoskin, who's a comedian, a friend of ours. And he was telling me how he went to Bruce, and I go, I was a fan as a kid, and, in the 80s, I could never get tickets, and I was too young, and my parents wouldn't spend the money to go, and I go, should I go now and see Bruce? Would I still enjoy it, or does it suck now? And he goes, let me tell you something. He's like, if you go, you'll have a great time. Just go. When you get a chance to go. And in 2012, I bought a ticket behind the stage at the Palace of Auburn Hills for like less than face value, like the day before the show, on a whim to just go, like, and knock this off the bucket list. I would have seen Bruce before I die. It's something I always wanted to do. I loved it, and it was great. I wasn't even listening to his albums then.
It's another thing we can thank Jeff Dwoskin for.
Jeff Dwoskin.
Jeff's got a Twitter handle at Absurd Comedy, ABSRD, right? It's not, and he's got a website, Absurd Comedy. So Absurd Comedy.
I'm sure they can find
Go check that out.
Well, but, you know, Jeff mentioned that to me, and I went, like, you know, I haven't talked to him. You know, I wasn't sure how those shows were, if they would be any good later, and you sort of get that nostalgia for things that, you know, you go, hey, maybe I should see that now, you know? Maybe I should do that now.
Yeah, you know,
And I went, and it was great.
I don't think I'm wired quite the same way. Look, I did go see James Brown with Little Richard opening.
Okay.
Because well, I was like, I should go see that.
Yeah.
I regret that I didn't go see Dr. John at the Magic Bag.
Okay.
Like, that was about 4 years ago.
Oh,
so.
He's kind of a big act for that.
Was like a cool thing. So I get that, but I'm never a guy that's like, I got to go to every show.
No, but you can go to that.
At the Pixies, when the Pixies got back together, I saw them like 3 times. And by the third one, I went, okay.
Well, you know, the thing about Bruce is that it's usually, with this tour, it's a little different in that he does not rotating the songs. He's playing The River all the way through, which is a double album. It's 20 songs. So, you know, a good 2 hours of the show is, you know exactly what it's going to be in the order it's going to be in. And usually Bruce is a little more, you know,
mixed up.
It mixes it up more than that. But he's, for this show, he's doing that. And then he does another 13 or 14 songs and he's mixing those up. So I've enjoyed the shows, but it's a three hour and 20 minute show generally every night. 3:15, 3:20. It's 33, 34, 35 songs, somewhere in there. And it's a great show. So if you get a chance, but it's funny that even since here's what's interesting about Bruce. Since I got back into it, not that he ever like wasn't popular or didn't sell out. It's way more popular than it was in 2012. And I don't know if there is this group of people that are like getting nostalgic for things, or they're saying, I better see this guy before he drops dead because all these rock stars are dropping dead.
Well, there's
but,
that.
But, you know, now it's the tickets are way harder to get than they were a few years
ago. Right, right.
And so there is sort of this rush to like either rediscover Bruce or see him for the first time, or a lot of stuff. You know, Sal D'Amelio, who people might know from this show, went to the Cleveland show.
Dave Landau
went down
there.
And those guys had never been to a show. They actually didn't go with me. They had they had seats in the nosebleeds, and I was right down the front.
Excuse you.
Not only did I hang out with the band, I got to be in the front. But anyway.
And you spent 3 times as much for your
No, not at all. Actually, Bruce has great ticket prices, too, because what Bruce does is almost all the tickets are the same price. This is why Bruce is different than guys like McCartney and stuff.
I'm wondering, you're
learning a lot today.
I'm wondering if I would prefer Juggalo talk to this.
No, we can do that. Well, Violent J's got a solo tour. Now that you mention that, and we're going to talk about that.
Oh, God!
He's raising money
for
St. John Children's Hospital on a tour that starts in March. All right, but let me get back to this. The way Bruce sells his tickets is the tickets are almost all the same price. And they're about $150 face value.
So
and then there's fees and stuff.
It's a mad scramble.
And it's $180, roughly, to get a ticket because with all the fees. But what he does is that, you know, the floor is standing. It's all standing. And what they do is they do a lottery to see who gets to go to the front. Meaning you show up before, you know, in the afternoon, and they give you a wristband with a number. Mm-hmm. They draw a number. That number becomes number one, and then everybody after them gets in. And 350 people get to go right to the front. They call it the pit. And those people go to the pit, and then the other people have to stand behind a barrier. So they're like from the midpoint on at the arena. Imagine like if you went to like a hockey arena, you know, and you saw the blue line, say the goal is where the stage is. Behind the blue line is where, in front of that is the pit, and behind that is everybody else. So when you buy a Bruce ticket for $150 face value, you might get to stand right in front of the stage. And luckily for me, I've done that for these last 3 shows and gotten a really good number in the draw. You know, I was the number.
How far apart were these shows?
The first two were 2 weeks apart, and then the Cleveland show was 3 weeks after that one. So
in about
5 weeks, I went and saw
Bruce three times in five weeks, which is a lot.
I'm not saying it's not a lot.
You spent about $1,400.
Well, the thing is, McCartney spends $1,500 to go to the front row of McCartney.
Wow.
So when you consider Bruce's a tenth the price, now you can get into McCartney for less than that, but
you want
to get
the front
good
row.
Ticket.
That means something to you. Okay.
Well, it's better in the front row, is it not?
I guess so.
Yeah, it is. So anyway,
all right,
let's move on because Corey's really uncomfortable. Uncomfortable.
Here's the thing: when it's something you're not into, it's nerd shit.
That's fine.
That's what cracks me up.
Well, people listening are into it. I was on some of them anyway. So
I was on a comic book page, talking comic books, and some guy got in there and started talking about fonts. Okay. Of like, you know, I didn't like the Captain America font, so I changed it. And I just cracked me up. I was like, we're in a group talking about comic books, and there's a guy who's being nerdy about
look,
the
there's
fonts.
Nerds within the nerds.
Right.
You know, there's nerds amongst nerds, and you know, I that was a cool experience.
All right.
I think anybody who's been a fan of anything can relate to that, even if you change the names from the E Street Band or the Beatles to whatever you're into. You know, so that I think that's a story worth telling.
All right.
And it's my show.
I'm glad you ran into the three less famous members.
Yeah, well, I love the way that you're just going to just party. First of all, there's less famous guys than those guys in the band. I could have met Susie Tyrell. And really had no.
Well, I would maybe recognize Patty.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would recognize those guys.
Well, if you'd been to a show, you would. You know, you might not. They're not famous because they're on TV. But you know, Jay Clemens is very recognizable if you know who he is. So. Yeah,
just so the listeners are clear, unlike ICP, I don't actually hate Bruce Springsteen. I'm just indifferent.
That's fine. All right, let's move on. We got other things to talk about.
So
you're belaboring a point.
Just in case,
it's fine. Look, let me. Okay, here's the thing about the story. Let me make everything clear. Right. Corey was not there. Corey wasn't there. He doesn't care.
It's absolutely true.
Corey and his wife were watching HGTV. He was having a great fucking life.
I am.
He was experiencing. He was experiencing all the things that basic cable has to offer.
I'm glad
he was
First of all, I have digital.
you have premium cable.
I have premium cable, friend. First of all, jerk off.
First of all, look.
Look. The money that you're spending on Bruce.
Yes.
Davis, I'm spending on my premium cable.
Listen,
cable.
Corey. Listen, I just want people to know. Corey not only has Hulu, he has it without commercials. He spends the extra $3. I don't want you to think that you're talking to just anybody here. It's Corey Hall.
I don't want to sit through those Xarelto commercials anymore.
By the way, I got Hulu, and I bought it without commercials, too.
Did you?
Because I said, fuck that shit.
No, I have the commercials.
You have the commercials. Why do you have the commercials?
It's that extra $3.
Would you want to talk about Hulu? Because one of the shows we're going to talk about.
All right, let's talk about the streaming services.
Well, 11/22/63 debuted on Hulu. Have you seen that yet? I recommended that to you.
Before we delve into the topic, we did get a couple of responses on the Oscars.
Well, yeah, I can read Oscar stuff too. Okay, go ahead, do yours, and then I'll.
Well, these were on your page.
Huh? Okay.
These were from your post.
Okay.
Did you see those?
I guess. Then go ahead and. Read them. I was going to wait maybe because people would give us
more. Do you want to save those for
the end? Because there's another hour left of the show. Oh, maybe people would continue to comment.
Oh, God, there's another hour. Yeah. All right, let's roll along.
All right, 11/22/63 is based on a Stephen King book. It's a Hulu miniseries starring James Franco. It's about a guy who goes back in time to prevent the assassination of John F. Kennedy. So he goes from modern day back into the 60s. And it's very well done. I enjoyed the first one, which was a long episode, about a 90-minute premiere. They've only had two up since I'm talking to you.
That's the new thing is these long pilots.
Yeah, the pilot is almost like a movie.
That's not actually a new thing.
It's not a new thing, but that's the thing for these kind of shows.
Yeah.
A lot of good, like, you know, any good time travel sci-fi thing, you have to have the rules of time travel. And that's all explained very well about, you know, if you go back... When you come back through the second time you go through the portal, because he has to go through a portal to go back. Mm. If you go through the portal, it resets. So if you're something you can undo the past by coming back through the portal and then going back in, and it undoes. Every time you go through the portal, you go in at a certain day.
It undoes what you did?
Well, you go in on a certain day. There's a day in 1960 that you go into the portal when you walk through the portal. And then when you walk out, every time you go into the portal and you come out, it's 2 minutes of real time, but it can be as long as you want to be inside the portal.
This is less nerdy than the E Street Band's instruments discussion.
Okay. It's the Beatles instruments, but that's fine. But so it's really interesting. I mean, if you like a good sci-fi tale, it's all in that first one. And of course, you know, I love Kennedy assassination stuff. I'm a real buff for that. And there was certainly a lot of it in the first episode. Second episode, there is sort of a little side story about James Franco and something else. So that
you're
was
the only
two.
Kennedy assassination buff that's for the Warren Commission. Everybody else, I
know.
No.
That's not the case either. That's not the case either. Corey's talking out of his ass.
He doesn't know
what he's talking about. Look, Graham Nash certainly does not agree with me. But see, what's funny about the show is, you know, the plot of this is he has to go back and figure out if Oswald is really the killer.
Uh-huh.
If Oswald's the killer, he's supposed to kill Oswald. If Oswald's not the killer, he's supposed to leave him alone. But he has to become this detective in the past. Mm-hmm. So he's armed with this, like, folder of Kennedy assassination documents and where everybody was and all of the, and he's tailing, you know, all these people around Dallas. It's really interesting. It's very well done. You look, Stephen King books are not the most highbrow things you'll ever see,
no.
But it's pulpy and it is,
well,
you know, it does have a lot of.
You're saying when a guy puts out a book a year, it's not up to the same.
Well, that book was considered a real big book. It's been out for about 4 or 5 years, 11/22/63. It got really good reviews when it came out, so it was considered one of his better modern works.
Well, it is interesting.
And
very suspenseful, and
I liked it.
Well,
so.
You know, maybe he goes back and he goes up in the book depository window, and Oswald's not there, and Kennedy still gets killed.
Well, that I don't know. That's why
See,
this is a good show.
Go.
It's a good show. You should watch.
I will get to it. I just
11/22/63 on Hulu.
They only put two of those up.
Franco is a little bit of a blank slate, but it kind of works in this one because it's a guy who's supposed to be confused. He's supposed to be morally challenged in what he's supposed to do. So, you know, it's not like, you know, he's a real good fit for this, I think. Mm-hmm. And he sort of fits in that he can look like James Dean. You know, he can look like a guy from the 60s very well.
There must have been guys that oiled up and laid around the pool with other men back in the 60s.
No.
Sure there were.
Come on.
Other.
Franco's a real man.
Other twinks.
How dare you?
Yeah, he's a man's man, all right.
I don't know the Franco.
That's right.
Well, his brother's banging your girlfriend. Allison Brie.
Oh, Allison Brie. Wow.
That's Dave Franco, though.
Give it up for Dave.
Give it up for Dave.
Good work for Dave.
Go, Dave.
Oh, man.
So anyway, that's 11/22/63.
Speaking of Allison Brie's castmate and friend from the show Community.
Yeah.
Another new show. This one's on Netflix.
Yes.
From executive producer Judd Apatow.
Judd Apatow.
Is Love.
Yes, Love. I've seen that as well.
I've seen a couple more than you have. I think I saw pilot and first maybe.
I watched the first two of those. Okay. And what's your take, Corey?
My take on Love is that it's a show that is compelling without being great.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I kind of been enjoying it, but it's not.
I like the premise of it. The performances are fine. I'm not laughing a lot two episodes in, and that's kind of a problem in a comedy. But I like what it is. But yeah. I don't. Here's the difference. You know, I compare
did
this.
You,
to,
did you see the bit where they were doing the music for movies?
No, I don't think I've seen that.
Okay.
I liked it when the guy here's the one time I laughed in Love, when the guy's throwing his Blu-rays out the window because he realizes how shitty his movie taste is, and he's trying. That was I could relate to that a little bit.
He threw Sweet Home Alabama.
Yeah, I know, but he also threw out
Goodfellas,
and I go, he's going to regret that. So that was interesting, but yeah,
now,
it's not
look,
the
Goodfellas DVD. The Goodfellas Blu-ray is like $8 at Target.
It is, but
you can go out and get one. But.
This was created by a guy named Paul Rust, and Leslie Arfin is his wife. And Leslie is a writer, I believe, on Girls. So that's how they kind of got together. And Paul Rust wrote in, I don't know if he directed movies or if he was a writer on I Love You, Beth Cooper, or some movie
he was
like
in,
that.
He was the star.
He was the star of that, and I think he wrote that. He's a real, real geeky-looking dude. And
this guy has...
Gillian Jacobs is pretty hot.
The biggest nose.
And that's coming from Corey.
Oh no. His nose makes
His nose is ridiculous.
His nose, it's the Jewiest nose maybe. Who's got a Jewier nose in the history of show business? I mean, like,
it's a giant nose.
It looks like
it's a beak.
It looks like Goebbels production staff drew it up.
Well, it looks like
it's that.
It looks like Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah,
it's a big fucking nose. But yeah, Paul Rust is kind of the nerd who, and it's funny, the first episode, they don't even meet the two people.
Not really.
You have to wait till the second one. And then she's this carefree kind of party girl who is very nice to him. It's complete fiction. It's
well, they really worked hard to make, to kind of dumb her down a little bit, make her a little kind of unwashed and gross.
Yeah.
Which is not really working. But they're trying.
She's still too hot.
They're trying.
If she had been a little uglier, you'd maybe a little more believable,
well,
maybe.
They're trying to de-glamorize.
Yeah.
Gillian Jacobs.
Yeah.
And fucking Jillian.
Should she be 50 pounds heavier? Would that make this way more believable?
Well, what actress would work with Paul Rust better?
No, I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I'd someone a little less hot. I don't know.
Well, do you want to go full fatso with?
I'm not saying I'm consistent, because I've often bitched that Hollywood does this thing where it's like, "Hey, look, there's that dumpy chick, Amy Ryan."
Yeah, yeah.
And like,
yeah.
You know, and you'd be like, "Wow, Amy Ryan's gorgeous."
Fuck the shit out of
it. You know, so I always hate that Hollywood does that, where they're or they'll be like, "We put glasses on Charlize Theron. Now she's unfuckable."
But do you want?
Like, it's ridiculous.
Do you want Rebel Wilson trotting around with this guy?
No, I don't want Rebel Wilson, but there might be a happy.
There's between
that and that. Oh,
like
God.
A Kristen Wiig or something, or is she too old?
What's the girl?
Know.
Zoe Kazan.
Zoe Kazan would be more believable.
Is that a little? She's still gorgeous and attractive, but
yeah,
like,
not
quite in the. Same.
I sort of see what you're saying. I don't know.
It does stretch. Look, I know it happens once in a while. I know that there are people that are very clever and creative,
well, look,
and have very attractive spouses, and there's mismatches. I get it, but it does. Puts you behind the eight ball a little bit.
First of all, let me ask you this, though. If you're Paul Rust, and you've created the show where you're going to fall in love with a woman, you're going to cast the hottest chick you can get.
Right.
Not to mention in episode one, which was the reason I saw episode one before you did, and I go, Corey, if you're not digging it, at least stick around till like the 35-minute mark, because two real nubile young college girls whipped their tops off. And attempt to have a threesome with this Paul Rust guy. And you know he wrote that in, too. That was not a hard day. That was not... Believe me, if I was making the production schedule, I'd be like, threesome with two topless college girls. We're going to take about 3 weeks to shoot this. Rest of it we can kind of knock out. And,
now, the crazy other thing in this show is that his ex-girlfriend is played by Melania Yandrup, who is the girl from the AT&T commercials and from Other Space.
Yeah, Other Space, which was one of the great shows. But by the way, apparently Yahoo lost so much money on Community and that I don't think we're going to see another Other Space, unfortunately.
They shit-canned the whole Yahoo.
Yeah, the
screen.
Yahoo original programming.
No, Other Space was really good.
Other Space was great. And by the way,
Other Space must cost so little money that somebody else might...
Maybe, but who knows what the rights are. But anyway... Yeah, Decker, what's her name again?
Her name is Melania Yandrup.
She is so hot. If you see bikini, there's like modeling pictures of her you can find online. Sure. She's got the biggest rack.
There's modeling photos I've found of her all over.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think I'm looking at now?
She is stacked to go. So maybe we'll see her naked on the show. I thought we wouldn't get her past episode one. Yeah, I know.
Look at that.
I know. She's stacked. I saw one where she's like oiled up somewhere. You got to see that. Keep looking. There's more out there. Dig deep, Corey. But she's really something to look at.
But that's like Paul Rust's ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, that's his ex-girlfriend. And then so maybe we'll I don't know. Are Gillian Jacobs, are we going to see those before the season's over or no?
I'm doubting it.
It doesn't seem like it. Did they trot out? Because episode two had no tits. Were there tits since episode two? There were tits in one.
No, I don't think so.
And so no tits after episode two, maybe.
I haven't seen the whole series.
All right, but it's all up on... Okay, here's my thing with that. To me, I didn't laugh enough to really wholeheartedly recommend it. It's cute. I don't want to say it's for girls because it's not quite that insipid like a Kimmy Schmidt kind of thing, where it's for girls. It's funny, Master of None was a show that I didn't really like the first one, mm-hmm. and it grew on me. I never finished all of those. So this is kind of like that to me, although Master of None, I think I've enjoyed a little more than Love at this point. It's okay. It's worth a look, you know? I don't know.
Well, here's the...
It's not hard to watch, but it's not great either, so...
Here's the issue with this show, a little bit. It is a good thing to watch with your wife or girlfriend.
Yeah.
You can tolerate it.
Sure, yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
They did do the thing where she has a sex scene where she's, like, keeping her bra.
Yeah, there's a lot of butt, and there's a lot
and
of, like,
and you're,
yeah.
like, you're like...
Right.
I know it's a TV show, and maybe Judd Apatow doesn't want to get the titties out for his star, but how realistic is it when they're, like...
You're having sex
Let's have
bra,
hot, yeah. wild sex fully yeah. clothed.
Well, she's in, like, a bathing suit with no bra for a lot of...
She does walk around that.
And you can see her nips and stuff.
Now, this is not the only reason to watch a television program,
But
it ain't gonna hurt.
Yeah, but I mean, like, when I told you, like, hey, stick through the first episode, it's not that funny, but the tits are nice. That would get me, if somebody recommended me to me like that, I would do that.
Well, look, I've watched lesser...
I would appreciate a review like
I've
that.
I've watched shows that weren't very good.
Just for the tits.
Look, Californication was kind of a mediocre show.
Right, yeah.
But it was laden.
Yeah.
With nudity.
I always liked the shows where they get the rotating girls to get naked. That was like Dream On
that
back
Dream
in the day.
On.
Dream On on HBO?
Dream On invented the format.
It really did. It really did.
And let's give Brian Benben.
Brian Benben. We love
shout
you.
Out. Good,
Wendy
good.
Malick.
Yeah. Yeah. So who did not get her tits out?
No, but who cares?
Right. But
Dream On was the greatest.
No, that was like, you know how
he
like,
dated a different girl every episode and the girl whipped her tits out,
you know,
every show.
You know, like,
fantastic.
Like police procedurals or like legal shows will have like the victim or criminal of the
week.
Yeah. You know, they had like the titty of the week.
Dream On had the tits
of
the week.
Yeah, there was like a girl he'd go out with. It was like Seinfeld. He had like a new girlfriend.
What was her name? Michelle Pfeiffer's sister.
Michelle, that's her name.
That's who it was. Whoever her name is.
Dee Dee Pfeiffer.
Oh, my God. Dee Dee Pfeiffer. And I think we got...
I didn't look that up, by the way. Dee
Dee
Pfeiffer came right out of this.
And we got the other... We got the... I think Jennifer Tilly was on that, right? I mean, there was a...
Hold on.
It was a Hall of Fame.
By the way, Gillian Jacobs has done nudity.
Oh.
But just not in this show.
In some movie or something?
In a movie called Choke.
I've not seen that.
That was with Sam Rockwell, where they played sex addicts.
Oh.
So yeah, there you go. Thank
Gotta
you.
Gotta go see that.
There you go. Now we're done.
All right. Well, that's gonna do it for the show. I'm gonna go cue up Choke here, and we'll say now we got more shows. Vinyl debuted on HBO a couple weeks ago. I've seen two of the three episodes that have aired. This is the 19th. This is from the guys who brought you.
Speaking of gratuitous breasts.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Vinyl from Terrence Winter and Martin Scorsese and Mick Jagger. Of course, Terrence Winter and Scorsese brought you Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
And I believe Terrence Winter worked on Sopranos as well. So the lineage of those hardcore HBO shows. This one, Bobby Cannavale stars as a record executive who the record company's failing. He might get bought out by Polydor, and he's ends up having drug problems. Mm-hmm. It's one of those ensemble shows, very much in the style, at least the pilot anyway, very much in that Scorsese style. The Goodfellas, Wolf of Wall Street, crazy rock and roll montage, cocaine, sex scene, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Very much feeling like that. I enjoyed it. Andrew Dice Clay, one of the best... I don't want to call it a cameo. He has a couple good scenes in that pilot. And apparently he does come back, although I don't want to ruin it for anyone, what happens to Dice. But Dice in Vinyl, great. A lot of the supporting cast, Ray Romano's very good in that, I think. Especially episode two, there's a real whole arc with Ray. In fact, episode two was probably better than the pilot, even though Marty didn't direct it. Because as it gets more into their families, and Olivia Wilde, who we talked about, is in this. Juno Temple. Come on, you can just applaud
I'll
right
give,
now.
I'll give Juno a
you can applaud
bit.
Right now. You saw that scene. Juno Temple, really cute, and she's got her tits out. I dig Vinyl. A lot of cool rock and roll references. Some of the stuff it seems like they're not really getting right. They didn't really get Led Zeppelin right.
I did.
But it's a good show. After two episodes, I can recommend it, and I will be watching
it. I cannot
rest.
Recommend it.
Okay.
I will.
I know not, you didn't watch it, so why
no,
are you not
no,
recommending
I watched
it?
The pilot. Yeah. I watched the pilot and I watched, I don't think I saw the entirety of the second episode, yeah. but I saw a good chunk of it.
Okay.
I cannot quite sign off on vinyl. I'm not writing it off completely. I'm not shutting the door on it.
Yeah.
But I felt that the things felt off and weird.
Well, it seems a little forced at times, I think, at this point.
Well, it's Scorsese, and it's really like, hey, did you guys know the record industry was like the mob?
There's a lot of violence and things that seemed a little over the top. You know, there's backstory in this that was revealed in episode 2 that I didn't realize they were going there. And I will tell you, you know, there's stuff that, you know, it's constantly flashing back to what he did in the 60s mm-hmm. with some of these black artists and stuff that he was, that's how he got in the business.
Yeah.
So there's a whole nother backstory that we don't even know yet, I think, that's going to happen in vinyl, which I think is going to be interesting. So I'm in for that. I love that era.
I guess my basic problem with that is it's I expect bad behavior out of rock stars.
Yeah.
I expect drugs and sex and cocaine. When you're the executive of the record company, then you're just...
But those guys were doing that too. That was all part of the business.
Then you're just an asshole.
Well, that's all part of the business. Yeah. And, you know...
Did you like Ray Romano? I can't do a Ray Romano.
Ray Romano's good in that. Ray's good in that.
I was trying to do a Ray Romano.
Some of those guys, some of those bit actors in there that you know from commercials and stuff, yeah. they're in there. And they're very good.
Ray Romano.
Yeah, that's kind of a Kermit the Frog thing.
I'm trying to dial in a Ray Romano.
You get a little Kermit.
I can't do it.
But I like vinyl. It's certainly... Here's the thing. You know, when Boardwalk Empire came out, Scorsese did the pilot. I remember watching that and going, it wasn't that great. And then that series got amazing. So,
Boardwalk Empire, eventually, though, at the end, I lost
it. It did peter out a little bit. Yeah, I did, too. But it was great. It had its run where it was great. I think vinyl can be great. I'm entertained by it. You know, if you like rock and roll... If you like Scorsese, I think it's worth a look. If you like tits, I mean, come on.
I'll agree with you.
Vinyl's
on that part.
Good.
Yes, for the titties, sure.
Vinyl's good. I mean, they're at an orgy when he meets with Dice the first time in that pilot. There's an orgy going on behind him. It's wild. So vinyl's very good. It's not for everybody, but if you like that stuff, you'll dig it. So
I'm a little hesitant on it.
If you would enjoy standing in a room full of Beatles instruments talking with the E Street Band, I think vinyl's right up your alley. So there you go. If you think that would be a good time,
it's a very particular alley.
There you go. All right, another thing on Hulu: the Triumph, the Insult Comic Dog Election Year Special debuted on that.
I saw a couple clips. I haven't watched the whole thing.
You're in the right there, sir. Yeah, that's the right way to watch that. Look, Triumph's so funny when you see a 5-10 minute segment on Conan.
Right.
Okay. 90 minutes of Triumph is a little too much. Well, the problem is, you know, you have to edit Triumph. I'm sure when he does those 10-minute pieces on Conan, there's hours and hours of stuff they shoot.
Right. How much
they edit it down to 5 minutes. Yeah. And when they shoot hours and hours of stuff and they edit it down to 90 minutes, it's just not going to be as good. There are some great segments in there. One of them is when he goes and meets with college students to talk about political correctness and language. And it's really funny because those college kids are so stupid. And they've got no comebacks for his insults about, you know, you can't call gay people gay and, you know, you can't, you know. And then they have a black man comes in, a gay black man walks through and like steals a cookie or something. I forget exactly what he does. And then he leaves and then he brings in a police sketch artist and says, can you describe this guy that just came in and stole the thing? And no one would describe the guy as either black or gay or fat.
Right,
it was
right,
just really
right,
funny. Right. And then he's like this one blonde who's a real cunt in this that's sitting, a real cunt. And Triumph says...
Well, Joel's not afraid of labeling.
She's a real uptight, stick-in-the-mud kind of bitch. And he goes, and Triumph says something to the effect, you gotta see it. And he goes, do you know that I'm going to jerk off to you later? Or something like, and this girl's face is just like an ashen. It's so funny. And that was a really great segment. He follows Ted Cruz around, which was funny.
Yeah.
And Ted Cruz goes into these little mom and pop shops in New Hampshire, and he does the same speech every time. So at some point, Triumph is in there like doing his speech, saying the lines before Ted Cruz says them. That was a funny bit. And they dressed up Tim Meadows as Dr. Ben Carson. And sent him into a diner. And everybody thought it was really Ben Carson, and he acted stupid. And that was pretty funny. But there were some segments that did not work.
What's the deal with that guy?
Tim Meadows?
No, Ben Carson.
Oh, God, what a moron.
Who's giving him money?
Well, I told... Is he... Is he Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, they're selling.
They're trying to either get pundit jobs later on Fox News or CNN or something.
Right, selling their book.
Or they're going to go on a speaking
fees.
Tour. Yeah, raising their fees.
But,
all
but at this point, I think you did your that job, Carson.
Absolutely. But, well, here's the thing. For them, it costs them nothing. It's a lot of effort. But look, they're raising money. They're getting to spend the money. But I thought it's also true that, like, they can't. Boy, did you tell me this or something else? The reason people continue to run is that
they're going
to
owe debt.
They're going to, yeah, like there's so much money in the coffers
yes.
that if they don't spend it, they have to give it back or something.
Yes.
So they just need to like blow all the money and then they
it's
can
like,
leave the
it's
race.
Like, it's
or
like
something.
Brewster's Millions.
Yeah, it's
like
pretty
they
stupid.
They got to spend all the money.
But the Triumph thing, you'll get some laughs out of it. There's certainly, you know, but it's not all, it's not, it's. You know, not everything's a home run, unfortunately, and it just shows that when you do stuff like that, not everything's a home run.
Well,
but,
I've always liked Robert Smigel, but sometimes you got to edit.
It's good. It's good. It's just too long. You know, it's too much of Triumph. If you can find the clips, they're funny.
I think that always works better. You know, when he went to the dog show.
Yeah.
Or,
right,
the classic with
the Star Wars
line.
Well, that guy. Well, he does a thing where he does a panel.
Yeah.
And he brings out like all these political pundits, and Alan Dershowitz is sitting out there.
Right.
And also on the panel is like the Dell guy, the
yes.
kid from the Dell commercials, and the wizard from the Star Wars thing is out there.
Yeah.
And like Sanjaya from American Idol
yeah.
and the chocolate,
I saw a little bit of
the
that.
Chocolate Rain kid is sitting out there.
Yeah.
So it was kind of stupid. Triumph thing. That's okay. It's all right. Here's the best thing on television.
All right.
I'll tell you the best thing on television. There's a documentary about Bruce Springsteen. No, I'm kidding. The best thing on television. There's a documentary about a Fairchild compressor that the Beatles used
yes,
in Abbey
exactly.
Road Studio 2, and it's amazing.
Okay.
American Crime Story, The People versus O.J. Simpson on FX.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
okay.
the best thing on television. Holy shit, this thing's good. And look, not only does it, I think, fairly accurately tell the story of what happened, but it does it in a weird camp sort of stylized way that is really entertaining. It's very well done.
Well, you know, I was talking about in regards to Spotlight.
Yeah,
I like when a film when the form meets the function.
Yeah,
Spotlight was a show about getting the facts. It was a movie about getting the facts right,
yeah.
dogged reporting,
yeah.
paying attention to detail, and the movie is all of those things.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? The movie is like,
well,
it's got a even temper.
Yeah.
Well, this show. Is just as campy, scandalous, audacious as the real trial was.
Yeah. It's really wild.
It echoes the trial.
It's one of those things almost like, you know, it's like a true story being told. Like Joy was kind of like that in a way. I mean, Joy
yeah.
was a little more stylized than American Crime Story is. Or something like, I'm blanking, but a movie like I Love You, Philip Morris. I know not a lot of people saw that.
That's
a great movie,
yeah.
and it's a true story, but it's told in an outrageous way that doesn't seem like it could possibly be.
Yeah, that has a pulpy.
Yeah, and so this sort of fits somewhere in there. It's actually a lot like American Horror Story. It's the same producers that made that for FX.
That's Ryan Murphy.
Yeah,
and,
Ryan. But it's really well done. The actors are really doing a great
job.
The
guys who wrote it are.
I've got their names.
Larry Karaszewski and Scott.
Ackerman,
yeah. They're like the biopic specialists.
Yeah, Larry Karaszewski and Scott Alexander are the guys who did that. And, Ryan Murphy directed and executive produced.
Well, those guys did The People vs. Larry
yes.
Flint, and
yes.
they did Ed
Wood. Yeah.
They kind of are biopic specialists.
But, I mean, Cuba Gooding Jr. is O.J. Okay, Nathan Lane is F. Lee Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Paulson as Marcia Clark is amazing.
She's terrific.
She's great. Yeah. David Schwimmer as Robert Kardashian is great. Every episode seems to take a swing at the Kardashians, which I don't get. I can't get enough of because they're morons. The guy playing, I don't know his name. Yeah, Sterling K. Brown plays Christopher Darden, if you remember the O.J. trial, and does
yes.
just an amazing job as him. It's just really up and down. The cast is great. If you remember the O.J. trial,
oh, yeah.
all that shit really happened, and it's all in there. It's so well done. Travolta.
I wonder if people will think that it is sensationalized.
No, and it's really not. Yeah.
Younger people who weren't around for this. This is exactly how the shit did. They played it out every day.
John Travolta as Robert Shapiro, to me, because I watch tons of Robert Shapiro interviews and press conferences. He's not really doing an impression of Robert Shapiro. He's doing kind of a weird gay, like, Bond villain almost version of Robert Shapiro.
So Travolta's playing himself.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. But it is compelling. It is a good performance by Travolta while not being an impression
Robert Shapiro. Robert Shapiro was more like this.
Yes.
He was more kind of so wealthy, he was bored by himself.
But he had like kind of a deeper, intonation and sort of well,
I really believe that the prosecution.
He had sort of a monotone, boring thing, and Travolta's really sort of camping that up. But he does kind of look like him.
You're right. Travolta is compelling. Maybe not accurate, but pretty riveting.
But the rest of the people, I mean, Sarah Paulson, you really believe that that's Marcia
Clark.
She's
good.
I mean, she's amazing. The whole thing's real good so far.
I think three or four episodes in. It's really a cavalcade of horrible people.
Oh, absolutely.
They're all kind of awful.
Oh, did you see the last one with the Faye Resnick book and her?
Oh, yeah.
Connie Britton plays Faye Resnick, who was a friend of Nicole Simpson, who wrote this book just weeks after she died about, you know, their secret sex life together and all their cocaine habits. Really tawdry. She's actually a guy named Mike Walker, who you'll know
from
the Inquirer, and he was a regular on Howard Stern. He wrote that book with her. So, I mean, just the most tabloidy fucking thing. And all of those things are read by Judge Ito in the series. It's really great. And
I didn't realize Ito's wife was a cop.
Ito's wife was a cop, yeah.
Which was interesting.
That's also
that
interesting.
That was kind of something I did not know from that.
That's also interesting and makes it look like, you know, it's the thing about the OJ thing. The thing about the OJ trial is that there are all these things that look wrong, you know, the way that the evidence was handled, the Mark Furman's, you know, racism in his past. There's all those things that could possibly add up to OJ being innocent. And yet
they didn't.
There's everything in the world that tells you OJ did it, you know, and that's I think the series ultimately isn't going to leave a whole lot of doubt. I think the series is that OJ's guilty.
Would it leave doubt?
You think? I don't think so.
Ask a black guy.
Well, it depends who you ask, huh?
Well, I asked that question.
I saw that on your Facebook.
And I had some response.
I saw that on your Facebook.
I think you're right, though. I think, again, the cops favor easy solutions.
Yes.
They favor bias. They favor everyone's guilty to them.
Yeah.
It's not that they specifically set out every day and go, let's get a rich, famous black guy. Because that's not the truth. The cops frame poor people. That's what the cops do. The cops pin cases on poor people who can't defend themselves.
Yes.
OJ would not have been a good target for them to go out of their way to pin
It's not when they frame guys, they're not framing OJ. If anything, and I think the series shows that they gave OJ every benefit of the doubt. He got special treatment all the way down the line.
He got preferential treatment for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely the whole way. So, I love that show. It's on FX on Tuesday nights. Check that out. It's great. I know you're going, I'm sick of OJ. I'm sick of this. It's really, really entertaining. It's very, very well done. They did a great job with that. So,
It's terrific. And it does show you that not only did OJ commit a horrible crime, he also murdered his wife. And that horrible crime was making the Kardashians famous.
Well, that's true too. That was one of the ripples, you know, and that's the thing about all of what we have now, so much of celebrity culture, tabloid culture, really grew out of OJ. I mean, that was where Harvey Levin got famous as covering that trial for CBS in LA.
Not like there wasn't scandal in tabloid before, but the persistence of 24-hour coverage of this.
Right.
The OJ thing was covered every day on TV, like for E became, or whatever,
E had trial coverage, CNN had trial coverage.
Court TV.
There was a Court TV. There was all these channels.
It became like a whole thing.
And all of those, a lot of those pundits, you know, Greta Van Susteren was the OJ pundit for CNN. You know, she's now a big
Where's Marcia Clark now? She was kind of around for a while.
She's a lawyer. Or I think she writes books now. But, you know, TMZ caught up with Chris Darden and asked him about it. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's a lawyer now. And
Johnny Cochran died a few years after, and as did
Robert Kardashian.
As did Robert
died,
Kardashian, but they both kind of rode the
absolutely. So you know, it changed.
And they demonstrate that his kids got. They were like, "Hey, let's get a better table now."
Yeah,
because I'm famous.
And yeah,
for Uncle Juice being in jail.
Well, he gives that speech to the kids. The kids are all happy, like, oh, we get this great table. Right. And then he goes, look, fame is not something
it's not what's important.
It's not what's important. It's what's in
and
your
the
heart.
And the kids went, uh-huh, bullshit.
Yeah, and they're like, fame. Which, you know, and I know that the Kardashian sisters have come out and said, you know, well, none of that stuff happened and it's unrealistic. But, you know, they're making a point. And that's the part. That's why, that's what good filmmaking is.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I can't dump on them for making fun of the Kardashians. They're a laughing stock.
Yeah.
And you can't make an argument that they're not fame whores on one, you know, in one way or another. Come on.
Well, we certainly saw his ex-wife was.
Yeah.
I don't think they're unfair in their portrayal of her.
Yeah, she's on there too. We haven't seen Bruce. I don't know if we're going to see Bruce. Are we going to see Bruce? Jenner?
Oh, Jenner? I don't know if she married him during that
time. I think she was, well, actually, maybe she might have married him after. You're right.
Yeah, I don't know if she did.
They might have just been divorced. But wait a minute, aren't there five Kardashian kids running around, or is it not? Well, yeah, I guess there's three sisters and a brother. There's four.
I think the kids were all around.
Yeah, and the two younger...
are his.
The two younger, hers. The Jenner girls...
is her.
Yeah, she Kylie hims. and yeah.
Oh, God.
All right. Well, look, you can see me and Corey clearly don't have an understanding of the Kardashians. We don't have the textbook.
I'll tell you what. I understand the command structure of USS Enterprise D.
Yes.
But I don't have the command structure of the Kardashian Empire.
Right. A couple things that are back on the air that we like. Girls is back on HBO. I've seen a couple episodes of that have aired. And Togetherness on HBO. Any thoughts on those, Corey?
Those are both good shows. We loved Girls.
We did. Season one.
We both simultaneously without coordination.
No confederation at all.
Picked the first season of Girls as our favorite show of that year.
Of that year, yeah.
Gone off the rails a little bit.
Yeah, season two
this
sucked. It's been a roller coaster.
This season
seems
to be pretty solid so far.
Yeah, there's two are okay. I mean, one thing about it is everyone's starting to look a little old, which is what happens with a show.
Well, in your fifth year of a show.
Yeah, and, you know, they're 5 years in. I don't know that 5 years has gone by in show, if that makes sense. Does that make sense? Meaning in storyline, I don't believe as much time has gone by in the real world.
Real world.
And so some of these, you know, people are starting to look, you know, someone like Andrew Rannells no longer looks like a college kid, you know.
No.
So it's some of it's starting to get a little, you know. I mean, Ray was always supposed to be an older guy. So he's fine, you know what I mean? He has an age, but some of them are
well,
not.
Well, Ray would always be like, when you get to my age,
guy, yeah.
I'm 34.
Yeah, I'm 34. And
you know, but now Ray's 42.
So, you know, Girls is, I will still recommend Girls. I think it's pretty good. Again, there's times where I was ready to stop watching that show, but I've stuck with it. And these two seasons are good. And then Togetherness, which we both loved, is now in its second season. I only really saw the first whole episode and about half the second one. I was watching it before we did the show. Togetherness still good.
Yeah, and we'll see where it goes.
You know, we'll see where it goes. It could certainly go bad, but I like the Duplass brothers. I especially like, you know, Mark acting on this. I think he's great. I think he's great as that white guy, that 40-year-old white guy with all the pressures of the world of a white guy on him. He plays that better than anybody
else. Why would we relate to that character?
Well, you know what? That's fine. But that is the thing.
Where's my Oscar?
That's the thing about Togetherness. That's the goddamn truth with it. And if I sit there and sound like I love it too much, here's the thing. It shows that people in their 40s are still as miserable as any college kid or high school kid when it comes to romance. You never really figure it out. The shit never gets better. It's the same. Men and women relate in the same way that they do. It's the same thing. It never ends. It's different. I'm not saying it's exactly, but it's different, but it's still the same challenges. It's still,
I think
you can still have your heart broken when you're 40. And you can still fall in love like you did for the first time when you're 40. You know, you're seeing all of that on that show, and I think that's realistic in a way that you don't see in a lot of stuff. You know,
some of us find the right woman and are married and happy. But
yeah. Well, listen, Corey, we know that Corey's figured out love, and will never ever have to suffer in that way. Corey will never have emotional longing for another human being.
And
everything's perfect. And that's great.
Let's hope that's all.
And that's great. But it shows, you know, look, they love each other. You know, Melanie Lynskey and Mark love each other on that show, but there's challenges.
Well, the challenge is she took a dick from another guy.
She did take a dick.
But
she let a Puerto Rican fuck her, and that's always a mistake. I think that should This is just a joke. These are just the jokes.
And who amongst us hasn't?
The Puerto Ricans aren't. Listen, the Puerto Ricans can't hear us over the dishwasher running.
Oh.
There's no reason that they would hear. Listen, okay. I know. Hey-o! No, hey-o!
All right, let's. We're not gonna get anything better than that. Hey! We might as well wrap this thing.
No, but Togetherness, very good show on HBO. Duplass Brothers, love those guys, and
I love me some Melanie Lynskey. Melanie
Lynskey.
Maybe that would be a more appropriate girl for Paul Rust.
She might be a little too old.
Maybe
though.
Too old. For
I think she Melanie Lynskey.
Yeah, they're
40,
going for younger people on
and
those.
And yeah, and sure. Love is a little bit younger.
20s,
but it's the same thing. You know, you have Love, you have Girls, you have Togetherness. And it's the same shit at different ages. You know, it's still the same. It's different, but it's the same.
Now,
you know?
when will Amanda Peet get those back out?
You know what? It's been, I'm 1.5 episodes in, and I'm at 0 Amanda Peet tits.
Well,
I think it's
they'll be back.
Well, we saw the other guy's Alex's girlfriend's tits in the first one.
Uh-huh.
So there you go. There was tits.
There you go.
Still
that
tits.
Guy's good.
Still tits. And by the way, Lena Dunham, tits in both episodes. There you go.
Yeah, well,
in case you were thinking you wouldn't see Lena Dunham's tits.
Those are two.
Lena Dunham's tits.
I'm kind of good on those.
Zacia Mamet in a no bra, on the first one. You could see those droopers. We didn't really see those ever, did we? Or did we see...
Out in the first... Wait, when was that?
No. When they're getting ready for the wedding.
Oh.
No, she had a top on, but she was braless, and you could see the whole...
No, we still haven't seen Zacia.
We haven't seen Zacia.
No.
And
who we do see is Gabby Hoffman, who cannot
Gabby
be...
Gabby Hoffman's giant bush.
She can't be
no,
in something...
No, we see a titty of Gabby Hoffman.
She can't be in something with her clothes
with
on.
It's just she's not like, possible.
She's insisting that you look at her unibrow.
Right.
And her...
I heard... Did you know that it got... It's on... I have the Blu-ray, Corey, of The Martian.
Yeah.
So she's on... They cut it out. She takes her spacesuit off on the surface of Mars. It's unbelievable. And Ridley Scott just was fed up and said, you can't have your top off on Mars.
What is
it would be unrealistic.
What is Gabby Hoffman's Mr. Skin page look like? It's like my computer's going to crash because it's trying
just,
to load.
It's going to load so many images of Gabby Hoffman.
That's like, and Lena, put a shirt on.
It's fun. In episode two, Lena's actually, her nudity was pure comedy. In episode two, not episode one.
Oh, in episode, oh yeah. Okay.
Did you see episode two?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Where the guy goes, hey, I can see your bush, I can see your bush. And she goes, okay, I'll cover my bush. And she pulls her nightgown down so her tits pop out.
There
so
you
it was
go.
Funny. But yeah, it's good. It could turn into Sex and the City where the women are just old and sad.
No, it's not. This is the last season. They're done.
This is the last girls or there's one more? I thought there was one more girls after this
one. Oh, is there one more?
I thought they said there was one more after this one.
Oy.
I agree. I think they've said when the end is coming because they're a year behind. You know, this girls was shot almost a year ago. That's the lag on these HBO shows. They're shot way in advance.
Okay.
So I think they're shooting The Last Girls now or soon, and that'll be the last one. But yeah, I think this season is not the last one. But anyway, you know, there will be a day when we will not get to see Lena Dunham's tits, Corey.
No, I don't think that day will ever come.
Corey's like... We'll have a party that day. We'll have a celebration.
I think she'll do another show and whip those. She'll be the new host of The View.
Yeah.
And she'll be showing her titties on there.
I heard she's going to do sideline reporting for the NFL on CBS, and she'll take her tits out.
Look, Lena Dunham obviously is a real woman.
Yes.
And if I had met her in a bar in Brooklyn 10 years ago.
Yeah.
If
I met her in a bar in Brooklyn today, I'd fuck the shit out of her.
I'm just saying, not that she would necessarily do that for us.
Probably
but,
not.
But before she was famous.
Yeah, sure.
We had a 50-50 shot.
I went to college with girls like that, sure.
You had a puncher's chance before
Absolutely.
She was famous.
Please, yeah.
Look, but on TV, I don't need, I'm good, Lena.
No,
good,
it's a look. Here's what I'll never do.
Well, it's a show where she's like,
I'm never, unlike you, I will never tell a woman I don't want to see your tits.
Right.
I'm fine. If you're willing to show them, I'm willing to look. I'm never going.
You know, that's a good policy.
Look, that's gotten me through life. If you're willing to show them, I'm willing to look. It's fine.
Okay.
You know, I'm not turning
really
it
down. Achieved something today.
It's been a great show.
Yeah.
It's been a great show.
It is. It's, Lena Dunham. Oh, put them on. Put a shirt back on.
We like those. Come on.
All right.
Oh, by the way, I think we talked.
It's a show where she has three more attractive girls around her.
Well, that's completely realistic.
I know. All right.
All right. I think we talked about how I didn't... Maybe we talked about it off the air. Drunk Stone, Brilliant Dead, the National Lampoon documentary. You were saying you saw it on the History Channel, but Showtime On Demand has that. So if you have Showtime, you can watch that. And there's actually lots of tits in that, so make sure you see it uncensored. Corey saw it censored.
Joel has been talking about every tit that has
and
been
there's
shown
lots of tits
in show business.
Lots of tits.
And spent $1,400 going to see Bruce Springsteen. Well, so.
I didn't see any
but
tits.
But yet love cannot exist. All right.
I mean, love cannot exist.
I'm saying if you had
I'm
a...
saying love cannot
I'm
exist.
Go get a girlfriend.
No, listen, I believe me, I'm working on that too. I just I don't talk about it on the show.
All right, friend.
Dummy.
What?
Well, you're like, oh, look at this. Oh, this man's never touched a woman and he's hanging out with Bruce Springsteen. It's like, that's not the case. Come
I'm
on.
Playing a bit.
Get the fuck out of here.
All right.
Although it would be good to have some younger girls at the Springsteen show in the pit. It'd be nice.
Yes.
It's a bunch of house frows thinking Bruce is going to run off.
I know.
Them.
I wish there I wish there was a 46-year-old at the you know, unlike the 58-year-old.
No, there's young people that said Bruce, but not like
that. All right.
We got to go. It's time to go. Here. Goodbye. We love you.
I've had enough.
Thanks for listening to Joel Radio. Mm-hmm. Again, better than the Oscars. I'm going to
Oh, God.
I think this show.
When's the Emmys? Can we have another lecture?
I think we might have an Emmys, but boy, the Grammy sucked.
I don't think
the Super Bowl sucked.
I don't think the Tonys were as lecturey as the Oscars, right?
Even the Tony guys are like unpinning their red ribbons. They're like, it's enough of that shit. It's just
look, you can deal with it with drugs. We don't need to.
I mean, come on.
We don't have to worry about this AIDS shit anymore.
Fucking goddamn these.
It's, you know?
Can you guys just stop being so goddamn serious? Knock
I can't
off.
Wait for a 3-hour celebration of the magic of movies where I'm lectured. It's like a symposium.
It's so stupid. What a dumb show. Kind of like this one.
Yes.
Good night, everybody.
That we agree on.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Joel Radio.
Oh, shout out to Cam.
Oh, yeah, Cam. Cam. Oh, man. I hope you're feeling better, man. Cam, our big fan from Yellowknife.
Cam is one of our loyal listeners.
Yeah, he's having surgery today, I believe. So, Cam, get better. Shout out to you up in, I believe he had to go to, like, Alberta to get a surgery, by the way.
Well,
believe it or not, there's
How do you stabilize a patient on mooseback when you have to take
The Northwest Territories did not have the appropriate medical care for Cam. So, hopefully he will be back, and there will be many Toffee Fays coming into the studio around Christmas time.
Thanks to Jeff Horst for his behind-the-scenes.
Oh,
Chris Rock.
Did we read the Facebook comments? Damn it. Real
Jermaine
quick.
Gebhardt says, I thought Chris Rock did a pretty good job, although they beat the premise of lack of diversity and death. And Stacey Dash, was she being paid or punished?
Yeah.
Stacey Dash was a Fox News contributor who's a black woman.
And that joke flopped.
Yeah, and as a friend of mine who's a black lady said, black people are like, what? White people are like, who?
Yeah, Sean Stone says, Fury Road not winning VFX was one of the best jokes of the evening. But Ex Machina had great visual effects. You had to honor Ex Machina. It was that good.
That was good.
My cousin Adrian thinks that Stallone deserved to win, which...
Well,
there's
one for the eye ties.
Come on. And, of course, Sean Stone says when Stallone didn't win, his face was great. And, anyway, boy, we've got talk so long, the opening credit music is playing. Let's get out of here. It's Joel Radio. Good night, everybody.
Bye now.